Around Comics, Episode 46.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the mastermind of Around Comics, Brian Salazar.
You make it sound so evil.
Well, I've been trying to switch it up, you know.
Am I an evil mastermind?
Well, I couldn't say my partner in crime and the criminal mastermind, because that would just sound stupid.
All right.
And our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
I'm the Richard Dawson of podcasts.
And in the upper left square, we have the host of Around Comics and one of our...
Not the host of Around
Comics. I'm soon to be
yet.
The host. That's why I'm here.
Soon to be the
host. I'm taking over the show.
I say host of Around
Comics. Welcome to Word Balloon.
It's Word Balloon. It's the host of Word Balloon.
Oh, boy. Edit that out. The host of Word Balloon and one of our all-around favorite people, Mr. John Suntress.
I am the Charles Nelson Reilly of comics.
See what happens when I try and think of jokes? This is why Sal keeps looking at me saying, stop trying to be funny. You're not funny.
And I stuck a blank in your comic book.
And we have a guest that has come all the way from Canada to be just all the way from Canada to be on the show, Mr. Simon McDonald.
G'day, y'all.
Simon's going to be Brett Summers between me and Caters.
Richard, you're killing me.
Yeah, smoke another cigarette, friend.
All right, folks.
Dumb Dora was so dumb. It's my Gene Rayburn.
Who?
The long microphone.
Say, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I know.
Thanks, man. There you go. Come on, game show network.
Hey, everyone. Today we are talking about the greatest runs in comic history. Whether it's 6 issues or 150, we're going to be talking about some of the greatest creative works that have stood out from the rest in ongoing series. But first, I'd like to remind everyone that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by YouBuyNow.com.
Oh, I bet they're fucking happy.
Looking for good prices on action figures and toys? Of course you are. YouBuyNow.com continues to bring in new items each and every week. They carry a bit of everything, but their focus has always been on superhero and comic book action figures. Stop by their site and subscribe to their weekly newsletter to get regular updates on what has been released and what has been made available for pre-order? Yes. Check out some of their newest items, like the Han Solo Blaster Mini Replica, which always shoots first. The Clone Trooper Mini Bust, and figures and scene recreations from the Marvel Icons and Marvel Legends Masterworks series. Go to YouBuyNow.com today and use the Around Comics, open paren, all one word, close paren, coupon code to save an additional 10% sign.
We've got to stop having Tom read these.
I think so.
I'm trying to find new ways to do it.
So, yes.
10% off. Save 10% off.
Save 10% off.
And go to YouBuyNow. Great stuff. A lot of fun toys. Actually, those Marvel Masterworks series, if you want to have a little diorama of the Fantastic Four number one. So, very cool stuff. Around Comics is recorded every Friday from 7 to 9 at Dark Tower Comics. At Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area or in Canada and would like to drive down, we would love to meet you.
Did you drive or fly down?
No, I flew down.
Okay, thank you. I was going to say, don't.
It's a little bit of a rip around those lakes.
We were laughing about YouBuyNow, and I was watching The 40-Year-Old Virgin last night. Again, I had seen it once before, and it's just a pretty funny movie, but it's like all the stuff that they kind of make fun of him, and sort of say why he's a virgin. It's just, yeah.
All the wild action figures, maybe,
can be found around this table.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
The Oscar Goldman action figure.
It's amazing I got laid.
The holy grail of his ever existence.
Speaking of geeky stuff, our September contest. Can you let everyone know about that?
Sure. Our September contest is...
sponsored by Dark Tower Comics?
Sponsored by Dark Tower Comics, and it's our trivia challenge. On our site, go to the show menu under contest. It's the trivia challenge. It's basically every day you can go there and answer 10 trivia questions about comic books, up to 10. I think it's 10 every day.
10 questions every day. And only once a day.
Yeah, and the more you get right in the least amount of time, the more points you win, and the more points you win, the more points you get every day. And then
they accumulate?
Yeah, they accumulate, yeah. And at the end of the month, we'll...
Whoever's got the most points.
Well, actually, I think it's not points. It's because you can... Well, it's based on that, but you don't have to play every day to win it.
No.
Like, if you do really well and then come back a couple days later, you'll still be in. So you don't have to do it, like, all 30 days.
The thing is, there's one correction I'd like to make. It's not who's going to get the most points is going to win it, because I'm going to get the most points. So whoever comes in second place is going
to
get
the
prize.
Whoever places second to Tom.
Second to Tom.
And we had, like, 30 people play today, and it's been a lot of fun. We got a great thread on the forum. But,
and I know there's been some bugs with it and some issues, but, you know, what
Captain Marvel was in the JSA. Not the JLA. Was he in the JLA? He's probably in both.
He was in the JLA.
Well, he's been in both, okay? So JSA should have counted.
He was part of the Giffen one.
Yeah, he's on the cover.
That was crap.
You mean Justice League. Wasn't Justice League of America at the time.
He wasn't JLA. All
right, the hotline. Sal.
Yeah? Yeah.
Tell people about the hotline.
1-888-65-GCAST. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. We'll probably play it on the show.
And you can find that on the homepage. Gives you all the information. It's a great way to send in an audio top of the stack or just a salutations to us. We really enjoy the hotline messages, so get on it, people. ShoppingAroundComics.com.
ShoppingAroundComics.com. You can buy from Cafe Press. You can buy Around Comics t-shirts and hats and mugs. And
I bought a coffee mug and a baseball jersey and t-shirt today.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Wow. And then we also have our Amazon store, which we've gotten a lot of people. A lot of people have been buying stuff through Amazon.
I bought the Absolute Hush.
You did not.
Yes, I did.
Wow.
Someone's made a money.
Yeah, they're just
wonder
throwing
all the
it away.
Sponsorship money's
the guy. No wonder he can't buy his own mic for the show. You know,
I just bought a mic today. Shut up. And
this
new,
is an off-air
awesome
argument.
Stand.
This is an off-air argument.
All right. Anyway, but yeah, you can buy all sorts of stuff and help us out a little bit because
every little bit helps.
It does.
All right. The long box of love,
but don't feel like you have to.
The long box of love.
The long
it's
box
a comic
of love
strip
by Brian
side.
Bowles.
Yes, we've been really remiss in mentioning this. So it will be mentioned at the beginning of every show from here on out, because Brian Bowles does a weekly webcomic for us for each episode. He custom makes them for whatever topic they are, and they are awesome and funny, and he is fantastic, and that is such a big reason to come to the site.
And he's just doing it out of the kindness of his heart, and it's really cool of him. And check it out.
Yes, Long Box of Love is awesome, and keep your eye on that Brian Bowles character. Mm. Much talent in the young
shifty.
Man. Yes. Yes, shifty Tennessean. The Around Comics newsletter? Tom, we forgot
to
tell
you
about
Tom?
This.
I didn't know about
Sorry.
The newsletter.
It was just today I put up, you can... We send out email messages to people when we have new episodes or when different stuff hits the site, that kind of thing. But we didn't realize that it was just anybody that ever registered with our site and no one else. And you couldn't really not get it if you registered with our site. So now you can. You can subscribe to it and not register with the site. Or you can unsubscribe from it if you don't
because
want it.
Because we don't want to be pests.
Right.
So you can
no
subscribe
more than
if
usual.
You want.
No more
and
than
I
usual.
And I think we're gonna do some new newsletters where maybe like news, weekly news, or we might send out the
chain
week's
letters.
Books. Or I don't know. Yeah, who knows?
Chain
you know,
letters.
Like
Viagra
ads.
Or a mob.
You buy now.
Comics.
you buy now ads?
No.
No, none of that. I saw this.
Not until we get really desperate.
Yeah, so sign up for the newsletter. It should be a lot of fun. I
cut
saw this
me off like
actually
that.
On the image. Did you have anything else to add to the newsletter?
No.
Okay. I saw this on the image boards. Ivan Brandon did the Masters of Horror screen to comic adaptation, and you can go to Spike TV Scream Awards and vote for that. So we want to do Ivan a solid and go to Spike TV and give him a vote. And there's a lot of comic book stuff to vote on there. The whole Scream Awards, it's like the comic book horror movie awards is what
That makes sense with Blade. I mean, Blade, I'm glad it performed as well as it did.
And it's getting
and
better.
I think so. I think if you only saw the pilot and were disappointed and didn't stick around, you've been missing 12 really good episodes.
It's been getting a lot better.
Yeah, I think so. And I like the mythology. I like the overall story.
I'll wait for the comic.
I think, that's okay. I know. We'll see what happens. I mean,
I didn't.
Rooting for Goyer and John, shame on you.
They probably make more money than me. What the hell I got to root for them?
I'm rooting for them to keep going because I think it's a good idea, and I think, most look back at all the great shows and how like awkward the first season is for so many great shows, even Buffy.
Yeah, I know. I didn't even.
yes, I said it. Damn it!
Get out!
It wasn't so much that I didn't like it or thought it was horrible or something like that. I mean, I didn't think
right,
it was great.
You're just waiting for like you know Nirvana. I don't know what you're doing.
No, not at all.
You're
I just only have so much viewing time. In
how the
my
hell
life.
Have we stayed married this long?
I don't know, John.
That's it. I've had.
I agree with Sal.
You're great
you know,
in the sack. That's what it is, buddy.
Apparently not.
I have my shows never that said. I watch. You know, I have my Project Runway.
Survivor.
America's Top Model.
America's Top Model. I do watch Project Runway.
And what's the one with the houses on Sunday nights before Desperate Housewives?
Sob Story Sunday.
The home. Oh my God, our dream house has come true.
I want somebody to do that for me, man. Just with a hot tub.
I want someone to do something for me once.
I'll rub your back.
Thanks. Move on.
Do you like Blaine?
I didn't watch it since then.
All right, fine.
I don't watch TV.
We have a special announcement. We just figured this out today to commemorate Around Comics 50th episode. Yeah. That's actually not why we're doing it, but
this is our 46th.
It's in on October 14th.
Are you sure you did the math right on this? It is our 50th.
Yeah, it will be our 50th.
As long
episode.
As we do one a week,
as long
we
as
can't
we
can't
do
two
a week.
Episodes a week from now till then.
Okay, should we not promote it as the 50th episode?
That's
then?
Fine. We can. I just want to know if I have to name something 47.5.
Are we going
to
have some extra episodes in there?
I don't know.
All right.
That's why we should have pre-production meetings today.
All right. On October 14th, Around Comics and Dark Tower Comics are proud to present a signing at Dark Tower.
We're proud.
That's right. We're proud to present.
Give me another beer.
I just had Thai food. I'm a little tongue-tied.
All right. Go on.
Tied.
See? Don't be funny.
All right. You shouldn't be funny.
All those people that started listening to us because of John Byrne are just
They're gone. Anyway, guys, we're going to have a signing on the 14th. From 2 to 5, you can come in and meet the likes of Francesco, Steve Bryant, Scott Johnson, Jason Malay.
Bryant's going to be here?
Who?
That's nice.
Steve Bryant?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh, great. Yeah, I can't wait to see Steve again.
Michael Avery is a tentative. Dave Wachter will be here. Wen Cody. And many, many more. Getting the list up and running. I talked to John, a couple of his buddies in the area may be coming in for that.
I'm working on Alex Ross.
I'm working on a guy who used to work on Badger, but I can't say it now. Can't say his name. But
you can?
No, okay, well. Bill Reinhold said he might be able to come down.
That's cool.
Which would be cool. So anyway, October 14th, we'll be promoting it a lot more from here on out, but that's our initial announcement. I had the pleasure of going and seeing our young man Tom at Improv, on Labor Day night? And I'd just like to say, Tom, you are a talented man.
This isn't on the show notes. So
it's on my show notes.
It's on your show. Wow, you have special, specific show notes for everyone.
Why do you think there's your name?
Like Tom.
That'll
give
you all the news.
Yeah,
I'm
like, what? What's going on? Well, thank you. I am talented.
And modest.
I'd like to thank God.
Any more improv coming up in the near future for you? I actually went there with Dave Wachter.
Other than
we had a blast.
Other than like making stuff up here, I'll let you guys know when I'm doing more stuff. I'm kind of taking a break now because it's like when Michelangelo did the Sistine Chapel. I'm sure he didn't say, "Well, let me go find another church right away to like start working on." I'm really going to focus my energy.
You're going to pull back a little.
I'm going to focus my energy on this.
I can actually say I was witness to Tom taking off his shirt.
Not taking it off,
ripping it off and then
stage.
Actually
Hulk style?
Putting it on your head like a turban on stage. So everybody got to see the Keith fucking Richards tattoo on his arm. It was great.
It's funnier than it
when
was.
You saw it.
Shout outs and thank yous. First of all, thank you so much to Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, first of all, for making a great book like Phonogram, and second of all, for mentioning us in the back of it. That was really, really awesome of them to give us a shout-out, which we had that happen twice before with Steve Bryant, gave us a nice shout-out in Athena Voltaire, and Tony Fleece
in My Lifetime.
In My Lifetime. So,
which is a fabulous book.
Yes, so thank you to all three, four, six of those creators.
Yes.
And everyone
that's we're not giving credit to inkers.
That's why I said
all the creators.
All
I thought
the
you said
creators. Editorial staff.
Editorial.
Publishers.
Even the production people.
Yeah, all right, here's some.
And if you visit the Ron Comics forum from time to time, you'll maybe run into Jamie McKelvey.
Yeah, McKelvey. Kieran posts on there from time to time.
Andy Parks.
Yeah, Andy, Mike. Spread the AC Love, the Listener LCS Challenge.
Good.
Would like to thank Chris Chavez, Equinox on the Forum. He and his comic shop, California Cards and Comics, located at 9139 East Stockton Boulevard in Elk Grove, California, were kind enough to put our flyer out. If you'd like to do the same and get a shout-out, just go to aroundcomics.com, click on the Listener LCS Challenge, download our PDF, and put it up in your little comic shop. Vote for us at Podcast Alley, if you would please. And, of course, my favorite, the iTunes Music Reviews. As I say, be as cool as Andy Parks and give us a review. And Steve Bryant sent us an email, and all it said was, I was as cool as Andy Parks. So we know exactly what he did. So.
Nice.
All right, there's all of our announcements. I had this idea to, because we, the big news out of Marvel.
I could talk about Julie Newmar for about 20 minutes.
Oh, good.
Boy, I liked it.
So, some big news out of Marvel in the last, three, 4 weeks was Bagley is leaving
Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yep.
110 issues. It's going to go down as the longest run at Marvel with two creators. Is that?
Yeah, I think as a team, I believe so. Yeah,
longest creative team run at Marvel Comics, just besting the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby Fantastic Four run, which I still think a lot of people refer to as the greatest running comic.
Well, sure. Yeah.
So
I heard Vern say that, and absolutely, my God.
Oh yeah,
hard to argue.
So I thought it would be a great chance for us to sit around and talk about our favorite runs or the greatest runs in comic history. And, you know, I guess we have to start the conversation with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby on Fantastic Four. Is it the greatest run in comics?
Well, I'd say for the Silver Age, it's hard to find anything to match that level of quality, especially the early issues, meeting Dr. Doom and the reappearance of the Submariner, going on to the, creation of the Black Panther and the Inhumans and the Silver Surfer and Galactus. Yeah. I mean, think of all the characters.
It basically created
the Marvel Universe.
I mean, if you think about it.
I mean, it's kind of for a sports.
Well, no, but I don't even mean that so much as just
set the template
for the Marvel Universe.
Created the world.
So many ideas out of those guys at that time, and just, it really. There wouldn't be a Marvel Universe if it wasn't for that run. So I think
it'd be very different without that run.
Yeah. It changed. I mean, it also, in a way, changed DC as well. So when you kind of look at those two big companies, you have DC comes up with Justice League of America, and then as a response, you come up with Fantastic Four changes completely what superhero comics, what people expected from them, which I think we're still sort of reaping the rewards from that sort of...
Or are we reaping the...
It's funny.
The whirlwind from it. No, I mean, I don't mean that as a slam against that run, but we say, they were going to be comics... Marvel... Would Marvel even be Marvel if not for that run? And would comics be what they are today if not for that run of comics?
Yes.
They would?
Superhero
comics weren't... Superhero comics were a completely different creature before that run of comics. Well, what people expected from a superhero comic.
I think that's more a testament to Kirby specifically, and that's no slight against Stan Lee, but I would say his dynamic storytelling made that difference. And that's interesting, Sal, because I would say if you're saying would the world be different without that specific run...
Well, without Kirby.
That's what
Kirby.
It boils down to.
Absolutely.
I think just in terms of the way he told stories.
His imagination, his creativity, his...
Not only that, but
explosive...
John Buscema learned how to draw
comics,
the Marvel style, by picking up a stack of Kirby comics. And in fact, every tryout was those couple pages of Fantastic Four Kirby art. Can you dialogue it? And the other artists that were coming in, can you plot a story like this?
Ramita
doing Daredevil. He was corrected by the style of Kirby. So no slight to Stan, but Stan recognizing himself, Kirby was his de facto art director, and even though he offered the job to,
but that's what I mean,
and he didn't take it.
It was such an influence. I mean, he had such a
that's
influence
him,
on
I
everything in comics from that point forward.
Sure.
how different would comics be today if not for Jack Kirby?
Well, that's a different question. And that's what I'd say, as opposed to that run, because I think that inspiration would have still found a home somewhere. And that's the
okay.
thing I would say. But that's just me.
Well, I think it's hard to argue that. But
I think one thing that the Fantastic Four, what it did do was you could tell a story about where the stars were the team. I mean, you look at Justice League of America before a book like Fantastic Four comes out, and really Justice League of America is just all the main characters at the beginning, and then they split up into teams, and it's compartmentalized to make it sort of readable and palatable for, you know, a kid to read. You have these two, and then you have these two, and they do this, and these characters do that, and they all meet up at the end. And you get a book like the Fantastic Four where really the goal is it's all those four of those characters together make the whole of the unit. It's not just a showcase almost for your various characters by necessity,
the stories
because
are
none
driven.
Of them existed before, and they weren't just a collection.
The only thing I would say, though, is that the Challengers of the Unknown was that same kind of storytelling,
yeah.
and he was doing that in Showcase at DC 5 years before the Fantastic Four. So I agree with what you're saying
yeah.
in terms of, you know, the focus was the team.
But they weren't superheroes.
Well, they weren't established characters and then coming
in. Well, they were
coming,
established
well, they were
characters, but they weren't...
Well,
they
I'm
weren't,
talking about
they
FF.
Were, they,
FF.
Were, they were adventurous. Oh, I see, because
yeah.
I was going to say
yeah.
The Challengers, certainly. But I was going to say they're more adventurous. And, in fact,
right.
even the Fantastic Four was really an adventure team that they said, no, make the... You know, the first couple of issues, they're not even in costume.
Right.
It wasn't until, like, 3 or something that mm-hmm. they were finally, you know... had the blue suits and everything.
But I think, you know, bringing it back around to the topic is you know, what Mark, why was that such an important run, and why those two creators being on that book for, what, 102 issues? Is that what it
something
was?
Like something
that,
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I don't want to say 111, but I might be wrong.
No, I think it was like 105 or 106.
That's, yeah.
But somewhere in there.
Probably
like
be burned that. At the stake by fanboys out there
yeah,
for not knowing
it
that.
It is exactly 100.
Well, it's less than 110, I believe. So.
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah. And isn't it interesting that they made Spider-Girl end?
Relaunch.
And now it's, you know, or I guess, you know, I forget what it's called now.
The
Amazing
Spider-Girl.
Yeah. Because really, DeFalco and Friends... probably, we're a serious contender, and they have no intention of breaking up. So I think that's kind of interesting that the title changed.
I think they're trying to do it to get a bump in number one sales.
Well, what we talked about,
Ultimate's the Cadillac of the library.
We talked about this before. It's like, and I think it was Mike Norton was saying, you know, it's like, yeah, 100 issues. That's great in this day and age for two guys to be on 100 issues. You know, for that long on the same book, but you know. 25 years ago,
that wasn't that big of a deal.
It was nothing. I mean, nobody
you know,
would even
well,
nobody would even
no,
say
well,
boo.
How many books 25 years ago had the same creative team for over 100 issues? I mean, were there a lot of them? Same creative team,
well,
maybe not same individual creator.
If you have a group of guys, I don't know. You look at the Mort Weisinger era of Superman,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, you really had Kurt Swan, Al Plastino. I mean, those are the artists, and I'm trying to think of who else. But, I mean, you had Jerry Siegel, and I'm trying to I forget who wrote some of the other ones.
Kane.
But it was, Kane was Batman, and that was, and Shelley Moldoff, that was the Kane studio. But, no, it's, that's the thing. So, no, I if you're saying two people know, but I know the Superman books definitely had, I mean, Kurt Swan was on Superman forever. And it's funny, because in terms of runs, I wasn't thinking of teams. I was thinking of specific individual creators.
Yeah.
And, I think you do have to put Chris Wan on Superman as having a very important, you know, distinctive
well, he's
run
what,
from an art standpoint.
He's what Superman, that's what Superman looks like.
Exactly.
You know, like,
For 30 years.
Yeah.
For 30 years.
If you had to identify Superman.
Or 25 years.
That's the Superman that
right.
you recognize.
It went from Schuster to Wayne Boring to Kurt Swan.
For
to
decade,
Byrne.
Yeah.
Yeah, to Byrne. I mean, really, it was Kurt Swan and then it was Byrne.
Wow.
It was Kurt Swan and Murphy Anderson.
Wow.
Right.
So.
What I tell you what, we got a ton of listener emails, and
mm-hmm.
no, you got one, Simon?
Well, no, I was just gonna back when we were talking about the Fantastic Four. I mean, one of the defining things about them, they weren't just a team; they were a family, and they interacted
mm-hmm.
on the personal level so much. And that's not something that you had in Justice League. It was like, okay, Flash and Batman, and Green Lantern got together; they beat a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't argue about it later.
Snap
yeah.
a car.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's Ginchy getting my hot rod.
No, you're right, the soap opera. I think
well,
you're right, the family.
Well, that was what was different about the Marvel Universe, I think, in the very beginning, is that they had conflict with each other, that you had You know,
sure.
That was a big difference.
And this maybe is a topic for a different show, but kind of what I was thinking of is, you know, I like the idea of trying to imagine what comics would be like without that run. And it, what it reminds me of in a contemporary way is like Watchmen. Mm-hmm. We're still looking at comics being made trying to be Watchmen.
Sure.
Or Watchmen-esque. And I think it's the same sort of thing. You know, it's like for so many, and I think it went on for longer, but for decades you saw comics trying to be...
The Marvel style.
That Marvel style, that Fantastic Four style for literally... God, I mean, still, to some degree, but not nearly as prevalent as it was.
Have you guys ever seen those original Thunder Agent comics that Wally Wood Studio did, those Tower comics?
Yeah, I've seen
them. They are so Marvel.
Yeah.
And even Joe Simon at Harvey and at Archie doing things like The Fly and things like that, or even the Secret Life of Private Strong, the mm-hmm. third S.H.I.E.L.D. and things. I mean, yeah, that kind of Marvel storytelling is going on. So, no, I see what you're saying. I attribute that more to Simon and Kirby than I do, and that Stan was kind of a guy that latched into that.
I don't disagree with that at all. I'm just trying to put it in the relevance of what were comics before that and what were comics after that.
All right, guys, the forum was hopping with this topic. They really latched onto it this week. So we have a ton of forum posts, and I think they'll be great conversation starters for us to talk about whatever run these guys have talked about. So, Tom, do you want to start us off with the first post?
Sure. Scott C. in Chicago. Paul Levitz is Legion run. To boil it down a bit more, you could say the Levitz Giffen run. It's been approximately 18 years since Levitz last wrote Legion of Superheroes, but every run since then, including Wade's current run, has been able to get out from under the Levitz shadow.
Very true.
I was just flipping through the Great Darkness saga a couple of days ago, and it still looks wonderful. That's true.
Even going back to the 70s, I'll say Levitz and Grell. I mean, that's the thing.
I mean,
again,
he was writing that when he was 13.
That
was Jim Shooter. I got him all screwed up.
No, but Levitz, you know, did take over in the 70s.
Yeah.
And the Legion had decent writers back before then. But Levitz and Grell, I think, had a very important run. And then, as the guy says, when Giffen came on, it just got better and more interesting.
Yep.
And even through the Baxter paper era of those direct comic versions of the Legion and Titans and stuff like that. Levitz, I will put Levitz Legion next to Wolfman and Perez's Titans and tell you that both were equally entertaining.
I think the only disadvantage it's had almost historically is that DC's willingness to start over.
Well, as the present
changes, Legion always,
because the problem is as the present changes, it dictates that the future has to change as well.
I think that's the only reason why it doesn't get the same sort of credibility that Wolfman gets, because every couple of years, they've kind of just said, "Well, here's New Legion." So it's
now Superman doesn't fit anymore. What do we do? And that's a regret.
So they've kind of gotten.
And also, to be honest, I mean, that's just been a problem with Legion anyway. Just not having
it's the future.
Superman. Well, but also just not having Superboy part of it. It really
affects it.
Yeah, you're missing it. Supergirl's an interesting one, but I agree with Levitz. I think that's a very good point.
All right, yeah, I've never been a Legion reader because I never found a good place to jump on.
You could start reading the Wades. I like the Wades.
I think the Wade run has been very good. Okay. And I thought Abnett and Lanning actually did an excellent job as well.
Yeah,
because there are Legion fans out there that are like, I've always read Legion. It is my book.
And they're like Jets fans at the draft when they pick somebody that says, like, they're rebooting again? What the? How many times do I have to buy another one?
Exactly. Yeah, every time.
Exactly. If you want a jumping on point, wait 3 more months. They'll reboot it again.
They'll reboot it again.
Okay.
Maybe I'll
pick. I'm actually looking at the two trades here of the Mark Wade run, so maybe I'll pick those up tonight. Sal, next post?
This is from Mouse D. He said, Grant Morrison's runs on X-Men and Animal Man. And also, when I was a kid, Steve Gerber's Howard the Duck was a big influence. I'm reading it again in the Essentials trade. Fun stuff.
Applause from John Central.
Yeah.
The Steve Gerber stuff on Howard the Duck.
With Gene Colan.
To this day, you won't find anything like that. Still, I think really legitimately you won't find a book that's quite that sort of playful yet very... A lot of commentary on the way a society is, and I mean, it's really a perfect mesh between those two things that I think was slightly ahead of where comics were ready.
That
to
seems
go
like
that
a perfect
time.
Book for you, Tom.
Yeah, the subversive mainstream book.
Yeah,
that's what it was. It really was, and you know, and it caught up with them eventually, and that's why they stopped doing it. But and of course the George Lucas film bombing didn't help.
I still like that film.
Yeah. Well, back to back to Grant Morrison's run on, yeah. on actually New X-Men. Is what it was called.
5 years.
And that they're doing an omnibus right. on
he
that.
He was on New X-Men for 5 years.
It was a long time. Yeah.
yeah.
Or 4 years, something like that.
Yeah, well, they're getting...
I mean, actually,
they're gonna,
with
they're
delays,
gonna,
maybe it
yeah,
only
I think it
years.
I think it...
Well, they're going to... I think if
I
they,
say four,
the complete the complete series is going to be in an omnibus, which
yep.
is like 35, 37-ish.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I think it maybe was like 3 years spread over four and a half or something because of the quietly delays.
Yeah.
But that was...
Wonky stuff.
Oh, it's great. I mean... It's, you know, I can't blame Marvel for doing it, that they've sort of taken all that.
Got rid of it.
yeah, you know, I mean, because it was so bizarre, but yeah. it doesn't really matter. I mean, it's not, you know,
you
I
still
mean.
Still have your copies.
What?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's so good. It's just, you know, really takes a completely different look at the X-Men and all those characters and injects such a fresh... feeling yeah. in all of them, and so
oh,
you know,
and
expansive.
And John mentioned that you can't talk about that run without mentioning Quietly.
Yeah.
Well, oh yeah.
I mean, I think we were talking about this on the forum, because I made a mention about how much I like Planet Hulk for certain reasons, and one of the things I love is the same reason why I really like Grant Morrison's X-Men is for me I stopped liking the X-Men when it became so introverted into its own universe and its own characters, where
when they stopped just kicking people.
Everyone
asses.
Seemed yeah. to like everyone was a sad character. Everyone was like, "Woe is me." Every issue was about like a sister.
Well, they're,
or brother
they're minorities.
Up. Yeah,
Tom. I mean, have a little.
No, it was always like, "Oh, this is my sister. This is my brother." This,
no,
you know,
I know what you mean.
But
I,
Grant
I,
Morrison was able to say, "You
he
know,
stu-
you
he
have
was able to step
great,
away from that.
You have this team where you can do anything. You can go into space. You
right.
can have magic. You can
and
have the, all these things, and you can use all of them." You know.
Yeah, that was the great
story.
Thing about it is that he took them out of the X-Mansion and. Into a world again,
yeah.
you know what I mean, and even outside of that, you know,
yeah.
into like different universes.
We're gonna take the car out of the garage and go.
Yeah, I mean,
it.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with Tom, you know, completely on that point. Is that he made that a big, adventurous book again, as opposed to like, you know, a bunch of crybabies, you know, whining.
And Animal Man, God, that was such a great companion to Swamp Thing in the '80s. It really kind of took over the. Juice of Swamp Thing and the excitement, I think, that, you know, I mean, Sandman, you know, Gaiman Sandman as well, but Animal Man just really was a good, weird, you know, book that...
I never read it. I still have
really?
To... I'm still trying
yeah.
to get the...
Yeah,
I want to get
it.
I
think
have
you can buy it at
the
Amazon
trades,
store at Around Comics.
I know,
the
I just...
Way,
I gotta get around to it.
The way it dovetails in the post-Crisis world, too, and just kind of referencing Crisis, and a lot of the weirdness that you saw of the Psycho Pirate... An Infinite Crisis comes
from
Animal
that,
Man.
Yeah.
And just that moment where even, you know...
Animal Man's the one who knows really what's...
Right,
he's seen it all.
He sees us. I mean, yeah, he has literally looked at the other side of the universe, you know, from the outside, and knows that we're looking at him. And it's that, oh my God, you guys are looking at me right now. And it's one of the most, you know, fantastic moments in the book. No, he... Morrison's
I've heard
a special
so many good
creator,
things about
it.
Yeah,
there,
he's a brilliant writer.
All right, and I think this
maybe
gets
not on
mentioned.
Batman, but
oh, come on, let's not go there.
Next one.
All right, I think we actually have some more posts about Morrison, but John.
Yeah, Prodigy One says I think Christopher Priest's Black Panther is one of the best runs in comics that gave life to a very underused character. His entire run still isn't traded by Marvel, and that's a crime in itself. Marvel did everything they can to promote that run. And it was really one of the best
awesome.
Written runs in Marvel Knights. And I even liked the Casper Cole character that, you know, the story kind of dovetailed in when the thought was, all right, if you don't like T'Challa, maybe you'll like this guy. And I still thought it was an interesting story. Priest is great. He's a fantastic writer and continues
he's
to
be. He's
been
around for
yeah.
so
Jim Owsley,
long.
Yeah, exactly.
He's done
that's,
stuff forever.
You know, that was his real name, and
yeah.
I know Priest is his pen name, but he's an excellent writer, and he's... deserving of your attention.
I want to take this moment to mention that we said Prodigy One's name on the podcast. So
yes,
it was shout out
can't
to Prodigy
complain,
One.
Yeah.
There he
can't
is.
Can't complain about it on the forum.
Thank you, Prodigy.
Yeah,
you're a great
you
poster, and we really appreciate it. And I've messed up like three times. I was supposed to mention something.
It
that
still
you
might get edited
done.
Out. So
yeah,
you don't even
could,
know.
So.
It'd be like beep.
I love the Priest run on Black Panther is one of my all time favorites. So I really enjoyed that run. I thought it was fantastic. And speaking of Christopher Priest fans, Tom, the next one.
Oh, David Price also mentioned Christopher Priest, but he also mentions Matt Wagner on Sandman Mystery Theater, Walt Simonson on Thor, Wolfman and Perez on the New Teen Titans, and a lot of good stuff from David Michelinie. He spelled it out phonetically. Run on Amazing Spider-Man from the late 80s to 94. And Matt Wagner writing Grendel.
Oh, don't forget Bill Mantlow on
Rom.
Oh,
Bill Mantlow on Rom.
On Rom, yes.
Come on, is that really considered a great run? Rom? It can't even be considered a great comic. Come on.
Yeah, Rom's got his corner of fans, though. You got to give
him.
Everybody loves Rom.
Well, yes. I think post, they actually, someone says, you know, David, maybe Micronauts was a little bit better for Mantlow.
No. Rom.
No, Rom.
Only Rom.
I love the race.
We got to the other big one, the Wolfman and Perez, which I'm sure other people
New
are going to
mention.
Oh, certainly. Certainly.
I think it's one of the cornerstone runs in comic history.
They mentioned Wagner on Sandman Mystery Theater, soon shared by, well, you got to mention the other half of that, of course, Guy Davis.
Yep.
Who was so brilliant with his art. But Steve Siegel really joined that team as an alternative writer and I think fit in quite nicely. And I think his issues were ultimately as interesting as Wagner's, even though it was Matt's.
Different.
And it was Matt's concept. Matt's the guy who kind of fleshed that out. But I thought Siegel did a great job when he was writing Sandman.
And I think this is an interesting time to kind of make a little bit of a distinction in the types of runs that we're talking about in the show today. You can look at Matt Wagner and Grendel, which was pretty much his baby. So we could talk about a series like Preacher or Sin City as being great collections. They're really not great runs because those are finite series.
Sure.
You know, Sin City really isn't, but I guess it is now. It was kind of an
I would say run on a character that maybe, like the Sandman, as opposed to being a creator's own character.
Yeah, yeah.
In the case of Sin City and Sandman.
Not being one
Preacher.
Better than the other, but just a very different sort of thing to look at, like creatively, to see.
Well,
you know,
because
like
nobody else is working on
Sin City. Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You can't compare it to anything other than itself.
So I think what we're talking about today is Alan Moore on Swamp Thing. Yes, Alan Moore on Prometheus. No,
yeah.
You know those are
but at the same
creators.
Time, I mean, mm-hmm. Well, all right, never mind. Because I was going to bring up some, you know.
Oh, we can talk
fantastic
about
runs.
It's not like guys like that.
Like Howard Chaykin on American Flag. Like I bought all those issues, and the issues once Howard Chaykin stops being involved is like a 180 drop.
Oh,
I mean, that's like a complete. Well, I mean, that's just an example of a difference.
I mean, what about like Cerebus, 300 issues? That's a pretty amazing run.
Yeah,
you can't compare it to
that
book.
That's the thing. You can't compare it to anyone else working on the book, where FF, you can compare John Byrne's run with the Lee Kirby. And I think that's where some of the interesting conversation can come in.
All right.
So
fine.
Not that we can't talk
I didn't know you had limitations.
There are rules.
I think
we can make another
Vietnam
episode
sound.
Out
there
of
rules here.
Great, great finite series.
Well, what I did want to...
owned
property.
Yeah, or a creator. Yeah, exactly.
Want to say about the Wolfman and Perez New Teen Titans, that was like, at the time I wasn't reading a whole lot of DC, but that was one book that I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
And it was... You know, I don't remember what years that was or whatever.
Like
but
84, 85.
Yeah, and it was really, to me, like one of the first books that I ever read that took these characters and really told them. You know, it was such a dark... There were so dark
stories. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Marvelized
DC. It was,
Steve,
absolutely.
Have you read Steve Grant's thing on Comic Book Resources? He did a great essay about that period and said, you know, you got to give it up for two guys. Paul Levitz and Marv Wolfman, and really he meant Wolfman and Perez when he said Wolfman. But the point was, Levitz saved the DC line from being canceled because they were just like, yeah, you know, comics, do we really need them? We've got the licensed properties. We can make lunchboxes as a Superman
and
he said, no, you want this, you want the laboratory. And it was Marv that got that was the first DC comic that made Marvel fans say, wait a minute, there is other things going on beyond Marvel that are interesting. And it's because they had two Marvel creators doing a DC book.
And then that really kind of led into Crisis, didn't it? I mean, that...
Well, I think Wolfman's success on there, sure.
Yeah, and
Wolfman Empress, certainly. Yeah, they were the team, and it's like
to hit the reset button.
Yeah.
Well, I think Marv was the catalyst and stuff. So, you know.
I mean, and you look back at that stuff too, and I'm sure I mentioned this later in a post, but stuff like Roy Thomas on All-Star Squadron that was sort of coming out at that time, mm-hmm. sort of taking a way of looking at the DC universe and making it not irrelevant. Like a way of dragging in everything and making the whole history huge.
Well,
and then combining
between heroes.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
those. I would throw Roy Thomas in there a little bit with that.
Sure.
Well, Roy Thomas, that talk about a guy you could talk about runs on stuff.
He was the second wave.
Yeah,
he was really the most significant creator of the second
companies.
Wave.
He did stuff
well,
for both.
Yeah, the 80s, absolutely. Sure.
I mean, that's
No, Roy's amazing.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was remiss in knowing what he had done, you know, because up until really 5 years ago, I didn't really pay that much attention to who wrote what or who drew what.
Sure.
I mean, to some degree, the bigger names, that kind of stuff, but when I was a kid reading comics, I never paid attention to who wrote
it. It's all
about
the character.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And that's a guy that is like, over the last few years, I've just kind of, you know, every time I see his name on something, I'm like, wow, he was on that, he was on that, he did that,
It's like he built the character, he got him running, and then it was like, okay, Englehart, you take it over. Or Conway, you take it over. And just brilliant. No, you got to give it up to Roy Thomas. Yeah. He's, you know, and he got a lot of crap back in the 70s of being like Stan's houseboy and shit. But when push came to shove, the guy had a lot of brilliant ideas, and as Tom points out, they still stand today. And some of your favorite characters in the JSA and in
are
the
only around because Roy Thomas resurrected them. Yeah,
or he created
them. Yeah,
God, you know, or Adam,
or
Adam
he
Smasher,
gave
you know,
or
all
he
those,
gave them real
purpose,
yeah, and identities.
Yes,
you know what I mean. He did
absolutely.
That with a lot of those characters too that you see today.
Because he loved the Justice Society was his group, that was his X-Men. He knew as much about the Justice Society as X-Men fans know about the X-Men today. I mean, he was the original fanboy turn creator. He really was.
Well, we've got a couple other, and this is part of a Darth Kramer post. He wrote a novella for us, so I'm just going to pick a couple of them there, and Simon's going to read those.
Yeah, first off is Starlin Warlock. Darth Kramer saying it's the first deep comic that he ever read. On the first read, it was great, fun story. But as you read more of it over time, I understood that there was something not quite right about this run. You couldn't tell who the good guy was or who the bad guy was, and the hero was nuts. His supporting casts are villains and sleazebags. The only way to stop the future from playing out as it is, suicide. Just a great, thought-provoking run. Got me interested in psychology, and that page from Warlock 11, where there's a countdown and all the main players are rushing towards their fate, talk about tense. It was great stuff.
He said a boot.
A boot. Talk about
a boot. I'm Canadian!
Get over it, right?
Yeah, dude,
get
a boot it.
Yeah. Everything else you said was shit, man. Until you said a boot, they're like, all right, man, yeah.
But I know.
Mark the time. It's
fine. I know that Darth Kramer is, and it's Matt. I know that Matt is such a big Starlin fan, so I marked the other one there. So what's the second Starlin?
The other one's Starlin's Batman. This is Batman to me. He's got Robin, but he doesn't need a Robin. He's not perfect, and he has feelings that sometimes get in the way of his job. And man, Robin was a dick, but you still felt bad about what happened to him in Death in the Family. Now, me personally, I didn't feel bad. I voted to kill the guy.
No!
You're the one.
I'm still a little pissed at Judd Winnick for bringing him back. And the cult miniseries was great as well. A claustrophobic ride through Batman's psyche. Starlin dusted off some of the paranoia and schizophrenia from his Warlock run, but man, it paid off big time.
The cult was a great and forgotten prestige format story back in the day. It really was. You know, and Starlin is another guy like that, another Marvel and DC guy that deserves a lot more credit for a lot of stuff he did.
We're starting to turn into kind of, we mentioned Starlin on just about every episode. We're going to have to talk to the man.
Mystery in space.
I do want to mention, he also mentioned Demetrius.
Bob Hall, Sandman.
Well, yeah, it's a
Dematis.
Yeah, that's one I always mess up. Dematis on Captain America, Bob Hall's Shadow Man, Ostrander, and Mandrake Spectre, and Robinson Starman.
I thought
Starman.
It was Dematis.
Dematis?
I thought it was Dematis as
No, it's Dematis. I talked to him.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if anyone knows, John knows.
Dematis is what everyone thinks it is.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
No, it's
well, it should be, damn it.
If anyone knows,
Robinson
John.
Starman, which is another good example.
Oh, my God, that was, you know. But again, actually, I think that falls into that's the creator's character.
No one else.
Yeah, well, Jack Knight.
Else can touch it.
Well, Jack Knight has been barely touched since, and it was really Robinson when he was co-writing JSA.
That had him in it. Yeah.
You know, so
off limits. Wrong answer.
No, he is. Dan Dido said that nobody else gets to touch him except for Robinson. So
yeah. Really? Okay. Brian Bowles. Tom, you want to read that one?
Why is Tom reading everything?
I'll second just about everything already listed. Well, thank you. And add Stan Sakai on Usagi Yojimbo. Did I pronounce that correctly? Mm-hmm.
You did it. Way to go, Tom.
Brubaker and Phillips on Sleeper.
Yeah.
Well, that
one doesn't count.
Neither does Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah. Neither does Hernandez Brothers.
All right.
But Munchin, Sync Epic, Shine the Moon Knight.
You never specify these rules when you put up the thread on the forum, so it's really not fair at this point to discount all
that.
It's not that we're not saying they're not great. It's just that we're saying that they're
different.
There's nothing to compare them to.
Well, sure, there are everything else out there.
Yeah. So it's all good stuff.
Okay.
Good.
That's true, and you did just say greatest run, so okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, if
okay,
anything our listeners should be used to is like getting ambushed.
I'm sorry, you can't talk about great runs without talking about Love and Rockets. It's, you know.
Oh, hell yeah.
I do all the time.
Shut up.
I talk about it every day at work.
Yeah, you're also wearing a 1989 Detroit Pistons World Champ shirt. You should be out of town.
Got Vinny Microwave Johnson on it.
Microwave.
Love the microwave.
And John
Eating
Zeta.
It up. John
well,
the Spider.
Mentions and Sienkiewicz on Moon Knight.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
one of the stars of
John's
the direct
gonna,
market.
John's gonna like get up and like
hell
some
yes.
ass here,
Jack. You
oh my
face.
God, the thing started in that backup Hulk magazine, and was so great that it graduated into its own comic. It was fantastic.
It didn't last that long. Though,
John's
did.
Got like a furrowed
yeah,
brow.
You're wrong.
He's like,
yeah, sure it did.
How long did their run
sure
last?
It did. Well, again, it lasted for like a year and a half or so in that Hulk book, and then it went for like another 30 to 50 issues.
Did it go that long?
In Moon Knight proper.
I didn't think they were on. Yeah, oh, but yeah. What was...
Is there,
but,
there's
but
an
it,
essential Moon
I, why do I think...
The reason why Charlie Houston is running a Moon Knight today is because of Munch and Sienkiewicz's run. There is no question.
My God, why
no
did
question.
I think that their run was not nearly that long?
Because you're wrong.
I thought it went...
you're thinking,
I thought
like,
it,
just a
well, there's that essential, but that essential isn't
that
like
be.
Everything.
Yeah.
And that, and that essential is a good 20...
I read Moon Knight.
Shut up!
Get off my show!
All right, I'm leaving.
Stan Sakai on
Usagi Yojimbo.
Haven't read it.
Talking.
Sorry, haven't read it.
You should.
Oh my God! You got it. First, you have to see the Japanese movie that inspired it. Then you have to read it.
Okay.
He's a genius. He's some kind of genius.
What Japanese movie inspired it?
Yojimbo.
Okay.
Thank you.
By Akira Kurosawa.
I believe so.
Yeah. Probably. That's your default answer in Japanese movies.
No, I'm pretty sure I own that movie.
Okay.
So, quiet
yeah,
down.
Brubaker Phillips on Sleeper.
Yeah.
Get it. Buy it. It's awesome. Hernandez Brothers on Love and Rockets, which is our chance to say we are going to be doing a spotlight on Love and Rockets. So, if you haven't picked up the two tomes, Locus and Palomar, please do so.
The two tomes.
The tomes. Can I borrow one of the two from you?
I'll bring Locus next week.
I only have one room in my pocket for one tome.
For one tome.
All right. That's the next one. Jersey Droz.
The winner of the Right Tom's comic.
And the writer of
Make Like a Tree comics.
Okay, I write this with full knowledge that no one is going to think this run is the most influential. Mishkin, Cohn, and Colin's run on Amethyst, Princess of Gem World.
Give it up.
I'm joking.
This particular run, to me, symbolizes a time when DC really represented the fun place to be in comics. And by fun, I don't mean stupid. The great thing about Amethyst was that the story could get heavy, people could die, and there was this high spirit of adventure about the series. Sure, you had pretty ladies named after gems as heroes, but you had Dark Opal and the emissaries of Yvarn as the villains. I dare anyone to read the scene where Sardonyx?
I'm so glad you read this one.
Gets handed over to the Yvarn emissaries and tell me that wasn't freaky. And I also dare anyone to read the scene where Amy's dog Taffy goes into the gem world and defeats a pack of wolves to save Amy and tell me they didn't get one of those heck yeah feelings.
I know people who love Amethyst.
Yeah, there are people that do like Amethyst.
I've never read it, honestly.
The only issue
I
read was the Crisis crossover issue. Then they had one.
Michigan's a hell of a writer. I mean, you gotta give it up to Michigan. He's all right.
I've never read Amethyst. I don't know.
Okay. I trust Jersey Droz, though.
And Jersey's a great guy.
I might have.
The next one
traded?
Is...
Can you pick up the...
No,
I bet you can find it in quarterback.
This next one is from a dual listener. This is the guy that emailed in.
He listens to Word
Balloon.
Oh.
Australian dude?
Yes.
He's one of the nice people in Australia. Lee Webb.
Wow. For way to alienate a whole country.
No, actually, I have a lot of fans in Australia. I do all right in the, I do all right in Down Under. For me, it has to be Mark Wade's.
At least that's what Mrs. Suntress
exactly.
always says.
How are you, everyone? For me, it has to be Mark Wade's run on Impulse and Flash. This was a great run where the art complemented the story, a rarity during the 90s. It inspired Grant Morrison to do the JLA, which led editors to start putting the best writers back on the best characters, which has led to where we are in the industry. I would agree. I think there were a lot of great creators on the Flash that had very lengthy runs, and I wanted to throw a name up there before I forget, now that there's a Flash reference, and that is the great Kerry Bates.
I told them I was going to mention that before.
I'm glad, well, because yeah. Kerry Bates, I think Kerry Bates and Mark Wade and William Messer's Loebs are all influences in Geoff Johns' Flash, and I think you have to, you definitely have to talk about, I mean, and I think, I know it is for Wade. I know how much he loves Kerry Bates
well,
as well.
Kerry Bates wrote it.
Squeaking on the,
Kerry Bates wrote it for like 14 years. You know what you
yes,
know about
exactly.
the Flash? Kerry Bates made up
and literally wrote the end of Barry Allen.
Yeah,
I mean he's
like,
the guy that like took Barry Allen from the 70s to the end of the book.
Well, one of the things he really mentions here, which I think is great, is that I remember during the 90s, one of the few books that I picked up and I was always really good was Mark Wade's Flash.
Oh yeah,
and I remember the issues actually where Morrison took over. With
Miller. With Miller writing.
To write
yes,
it for like,
exactly.
for like a year. And those were awesome issues. And you can take those issues and trace it directly to what he did with the JLA. Like the same idea of
absolutely.
Blowing everything up huge and just like expand
yeah.
the entire universe.
And Johns, like I said, I really think Johns is a fan of those runs as well. And I think a lot of that same storytelling.
It's Mark
through.
Wade.
You bet.
Applause. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank
and
you.
I have a feeling.
DC Nerd.
I'm sure you feel the same way. All-Star Flash eventually. Mark Wade will be doing that.
Oh, yeah. I think so. Or Kerry Bates, bring Kerry.
Yeah, you know, he's. I know he was writing TV, and he wrote a lot of. He's like Jerry Conway. They kind of left, and you know, it's like
never
see
came
it.
Back.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. On to greener pastures. Next post, Sam.
So this one from Big Ben. No one has mentioned Stan Lee on Amazing Spider-Man yet. That stuff is iconic as it gets. John wrote him a senior on Amazing Spider-Man should be mentioned as well. It may not have been as long as some other runs, but wrote him a Spider-Man was the Spider-Man image for a long time.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's
yeah. That's
that
I
template.
Mean, that's you can't even.
After Ditko, that became the trademark Spider-Man mm-hmm. until really only about
what,
10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I still think of that as Spider-Man because
sure.
I haven't read Spider-Man in 10 years. No, but no, like I mean, it's like Swan on Superman.
Right.
Like that is
the trademark
to the
emblem,
people
yeah.
in America. That is what Spider-Man looks like,
yeah.
you know, and like I'm sure that's what my dad thinks. Spider-Man
no, not really. It's Scott Johnson's art.
It's yeah, it's Scott Johnson now.
As we learn now,
as we know now. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
I love Scott.
No, absolutely. You can't, I mean, it's yeah, it's
it
well,
is
course.
Iconic.
It's almost should be beyond you know you what we could talk about just because you know.
Yeah, Stan.
It's Stan and
it's Stan and Spider-Man.
Oh, yeah,
and
exactly.
Spider-Man.
Romita Senior. I mean, there's nothing. You can't touch it.
I'm Steve Bryant, and you're listening to Around Comics, and Tom Caters is not wearing any pants.
Okay, the next one's from Jamie Hood. Claremont / Burn X-Men / Wolfman / Perez are the locks from my childhood. As an adult, Bendis, Maliv, Daredevil, and it'd be a shame not to mention Terry Moore on Sip. Or Strangers in Paradise.
I love Sip. I like Gulp.
Well,
I
don't
like
think
Chug.
Be prepared,
I don't think you can mention Daredevil without Miller. I mean... Frank
oh,
Miller.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, at least they said that and not... I mean, it wasn't that long of a run, but it's so funny if people are like, oh, Kevin Smith redefined Daredevil. It's like, no, Kevin Smith dusted off Frank Miller's Daredevil
yeah.
and brought it back, and Bendis and Smith are the first ones to admit that.
Well,
but
Miller
that,
did
that
it for...
run... That, no, but the Maliv,
well,
the Maliv Bendis run...
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's incredible.
No,
well,
no, no
I think in the spirit of the post is that Jamie's saying that Claremont Byrne on X-Men and Wolfman Perez on Titans. Those were the ones that, and same thing with me, those are the ones that Titans was like the only book I read growing up. Those are more the teenage books.
Sure.
And I think that Miller run on Daredevil kind of fits at the tail end of those for me as I was leaving kind of like my teen years and whatnot. I started kind of graduating into wanting to read
well,
the
I
Miller
think
run on Daredevil.
I was going to say, Tom had brought up the point of, you know, creators that you know, invent things as opposed to later on, you know, with Kerry Bates,
over.
Who had invented all the things that you know about the Flash, and with, you know, Frank Miller, not only invented all the things you think about Daredevil, or a great bulk of you know, not his powers or abilities or that kind of thing, but just that character's
the tone.
Essence.
Oh, yeah, the tone of the character, absolutely.
Well, it's because he was more about Matt Murdock than Daredevil. It's really kind of got into what that character was.
Or even the superhero as detective. I mean, it was like, I want to do a pulp story, I have to write a superhero story, so my superhero is going to be the pulp hero of this story.
But that's something we should take into consideration with a lot of these runs, too, is like the difference between...
The influence?
The influence, you know, well...
Beyond the character or even influencing other things?
Well, certainly we could both, I think. But, you know, with Daredevil specifically, as great as Bendis and Malieve's run is on it, it wouldn't have been possible without...
With the template of Miller. No, I agree with that.
Yeah, well, I think that was, you know, we hear it from Bendis probably, you know, 100 times, and he's even said it on the Bendis tapes, is that
he had to
stop himself from writing love letters to Frank Miller every issue of that. Yeah.
And also, I would say that Miller's Dark Knight and a lot of, you know, certainly Sin City, everything that Miller really, a lot of things that Miller has done since, not everything. But a lot of things stem from that Daredevil run. And certainly Dark Knight was the first, you know, significant one of him going to DC and let me do, you know, with Batman what I did with Daredevil, and boom, I don't want to disagree, but I would say that while I think a lot of ideas that Kerry Bates did were you know, carried on by Wade and Johns and stuff, I do think you have to go back to really John. I mean, it really was always with the character. Like, the Rogues did come from John Broome and Carmine Infantino.
John Broome sort of brought the science part to it.
Well, and even the Rogues. And the Rogues, too.
The thing that Kerry Bates brought was really...
The family?
The family, the tone, like, the way the Flash relates to the world overall. You know,
and the
like,
generations of Flashes working together. I agree with that. Yeah. No, I agree. I think especially, like, the three generations of Wally, Jay, and Barry... That all was Kerry Bates. I agree with that, and a lot of what you said too about the
Flashcast for the Flashcast.
Yeah, we got to stop them, or they're just going to keep talking about Flash all night long.
Flash is good.
All right, next
no sip. Tell you that.
Oh yes, and Terry Moore on Strangers in Paradise, amazing series.
But we can't talk about that one.
That'll be on another episode.
That's right.
Next one from Stephanie Mangold, our good friend. Hey, Supergirl.
I got a bet with her.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
She bet me that she picked out like 4 manga books.
Uh-huh.
Or manga. And she said, you know, she challenges anyone to
not like them.
Not like them. Well, at least one of them. One out of the 4. And one of them I already
don't
read.
Like.
Well, Monster. Uh-huh. I didn't particularly care for. So I got 3 to go. That
was
I got to see
Battle
Royale
one of them?
No, it was like Sexy Lips. I don't know. Stuff I never heard
Ooh,
of.
Sexy right. Lips.
I don't know. Or Sexy like Voice or something like that.
Tentacle Fucker.
Yeah, I don't know. maybe.
Is this month's tentacle fuckers in yet?
There it is.
All right, I'll wait.
And I don't know what else it was, but she's gonna. So and if I don't, and I'll be completely honest, I won't. If I like it, I'll say so. But I think she's gonna give me $25 to I don't know something. I don't know like charity or I don't know what we're gonna do.
Nice. Okay. So
maybe I'll send it to Leah Hernandez. That's what
I'll
do.
There you go.
She said that Grant Morrison's run on New X-Men. Okay, so the ending was a little wonky to some fans, but come on.
Did we already talk about this run?
We have the best writing of Emma Frost ever. Period. End of sentense. The description of decapitation of Magneto. The mental affair between Scott and Emma, and the death of Jean Grey again, not to mention the whole Cassandra Nova story arc, the death of millions of mutants, and Jean actually asking Logan if his eyes had grown back yet.
So well, the only argument you'll get out of me, while I do think that, you know, he really did redefine Emma Frost, but only as a hero as opposed to a villain. I mean, when she was in the Hellfire Club and those, you know, burn issues, that's... You know,
same character.
The White Queen, and I mean that's a great Emma Frost. I mean, that's you know, but,
absolutely.
So, but I won't disagree that the new X-Men run by Morrison's fantastic.
Yeah. We've already agreed.
Yes, and read Hey Supergirl at SilverBulletComics.com.
And I'm gonna win that bet, girl.
All right,
I'll read it.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, I think this is where we start just kind of listing stuff.
Oh, L. Dave had Warren Ellison the Authority. Peter David on Captain Marvel. And I also throw in Peter David on the Hulk.
You can't just throw him in on the Hulk.
Yeah, that's
he
your...
He is the Hulk. Yeah. Was
and
for
I think
and
that was
12 years.
And I was going to say, I think that, obviously, that was longer than Bendis and Bagley. I mean, obviously, he had different artists through
Well, he, and he had... He, it was broken up too. There was a
couple of periods where he was on.
Like 12 years, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was...
It took them, Paul Jenkins and Bruce Jones, to get the Peter David out of everyone's mouths, if you'll pardon the expression.
I got a little Peter David in my mouth.
You know?
It's salty.
Oh, Lord.
He also says Jeff Johns on, and I always want to say Joff Johns.
Jeff Johns.
Jeff Johns on the JSA.
No question.
Yeah, that's a
great stuff.
I love Johns, I'd say since Roy
Thomas, best guy on the JSA.
Redefining it made it palatable for me as a reader.
Yeah.
So.
The worst thing is I've been staring at them all night, and I'm going to walk out of here with a couple of trades. I know that.
As we record right by the trade wall in the shop, and so basically I wonder my Sandman Mystery Theater fascination. It's because I stare at it every week.
And I think I'm three issues away from having a complete Jeff Johns JSA run.
That's impressive. Really? I think I have all of them somewhere too. I enjoy it.
Have you seen that cover for December? We talked about it, didn't we? The Alex Ross cover.
They're all around the table.
It just looks great. Now looking forward to it.
Next one.
Yeah, John Sogel. I think Joe Kelly's run on Deadpool was criminally underrated.
I would say that was one of Joe Kelly's best runs, period. I mean, and I think he's a fine Superman writer.
I have to bow out of this one.
Yeah, I don't know. I never read Deadpool.
I like, you know what's weird is, even when I wasn't reading a lot of comics, I still, for some reason, picked up Deadpool when Gail Simone was writing it.
She was excellent on it as
well.
That
book was actually funny. It was really weird and, like, kooky.
That's completely different
from everything else.
That's where you first saw Gail's humor. Absolutely. Yeah.
Gail's one of my favorite writers comics today.
She's good.
Sorry, Joe Kelly. We turned this into a
Gail Simone. Oh, you know, we didn't talk about Warren Ellis on The Authority. I mean, I guess. But
we've seen a lot of bad Authority.
Yes, we have.
I don't know. I love most of it, though. I don't know. Loved
everyone that's been on The Authority. It's okay if you have.
Brubaker.
Yeah. Robbie
Pretty
Morrison.
Much.
I mean, my.
Yeah, I actually. Well.
The thing is, what I think the big difference between when Ellis was writing it, when other people were writing it, is, like, the biggest example to me is the relationship between Midnighter and Apollo.
Sure.
Where when Ellis was writing it, it was still an interesting relationship. But as soon as Ellis stops writing it, all of a sudden, every writer after that feels it necessary
to just talk about that they're gay.
To just be like, they're gay.
Right.
When you knew they were gay when Ellis wrote it. You know, like,
yeah,
you don't need to.
It's true.
Yeah.
You don't need
right.
to, you know, to do
you're
it.
Right.
That was, like, one of the big weaknesses, I thought. Just, like,
I need
subtle.
A gay scene.
I looked at it sort of like, because I liked the character so much, it was just a different book whenever somebody else took it on. It was still the same characters. It's just a different kind of book. And I enjoyed it for the individual runs for what they were.
Yeah.
So I
can see that. I from my taste, when, like, he stopped, I lost interest really quick, I guess. Like, I don't know what it was. It was, like, at the time when I started reading it.
You didn't like Millar? Yeah, Millar did a great run on
that. I thought he did a great run on
that. I loved his run.
Well, for once and for all, you just interviewed the man. How do you say his
name? You know, it's our American, you know, need to make something more exotic than it actually is.
Millar.
It's Miller. It is Miller.
It's Miller. But it's Miller.
I think it's Miller.
Yeah, it's Miller. It's Millar to us, but it's Miller.
Yeah, it's Miller. Yeah. Well, it's just a guttural Miller. Yeah. I mean, that's all it is. It's Miller. And in fact, he likes it, and of course, he's always like, ooh, Mark Millar, you know, makes me
Mark
sound so exotic. But I guess the Europeans keep him honest, and it's like, yeah, fuck you, you're Miller.
Miller.
So, Mark Millar.
But, you know.
It's like Smith Smythe.
I say it both ways just to keep everybody.
Right. Next one.
And pissed.
Next one is Weak Rocker. Jim Aparo's work on Batman helped define the character during the late 80s, early 90s. He killed Jason Todd and helped introduce Tim Drake.
I would point out and spread that over another decade, and that's the 70s, because I think, you know, he was, when Neil Adams wasn't drawing Batman, Jim Aparo was. And also, a lot of that definition that you're giving to Aparo as far as looks, especially during the late 80s and early 90s, I think you have to give to Chuck Dixon in terms of writing. And it's important to acknowledge Chuck Dixon's influence on the Batman universe. And everything that he created. There wouldn't be a Birds of Prey without Chuck Dixon.
How bad of a fan am I? I had no idea that Jim Starlin had written that.
Oh, yeah, Death in the Family. Absolutely.
I think one of the things about Aparo is...
You're not bad.
That
you're just
he almost,
stupid.
He almost approaches that same thing we're talking about where his Batman is kind of the Batman that when people think of it,
right, the defining
that,
image,
that is what Batman.
You bet.
Is, you know?
Well, and like Weed Rocker says, it. You know, I'm sure he's thinking of like Batman and the Outsiders, which was such a significant Batman, you know, role and everything. And yeah, that was just vintage Aparo doing great stuff. But yeah, I mean, even those Brave and Bolds, when Neil Adams stopped doing it, Aparo was the guy who took over. And man, you go look at, and you're, I know you're an early 70s fan, so like if you look at those old like Batman and Wildcats, that's all Aparo.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
all Aparo. And he is just brilliant. Yeah. And they all just give it up.
What are you laughing at?
He's laughing.
I've got the here. I'll let John read it. A quote on the back of Batman: Death in the Family from
the great Danny O'Neill.
Uh-huh. Yes.
It would be a real sleazy stunt to bring him back. What year was this? Because this looks like it was the. If it wasn't the original trade, it's damn close.
That
88.
Is hilarious. Yeah.
That is the original trade.
That's did you hear that, funny. John Winnick?
Yeah, actually, look at the price. Man. Boy, remember when comics were a nickel? $4.95 for the trade.
I'm buying it. In mine, I call it.
$4.95.
Why? I got the original ones at home. You want them? I got them polybagged and
no. That'd be I'll make the trade.
I got like nine of them. You know,
a real sleazy
fucking
movie.
Definitely.
No, you know, well, and really, Starlin has talked about this before. The shitty thing is, you know, they let the 900 number dictate that Jason Todd would die. He wrote the story. And they all got shit for killing Robin because, again, that's the image. It's not, no, Dick Grayson is fine. This is another Robin.
Well, you had
you
so many people come
Robin.
In and didn't have any
right.
idea. That.
And you know, yeah, O'Neill used to get a cost support. And Starlin ended up losing the job because there was so much hatred about killing Robin. And it's like,
it's
hey.
The fit you voted for.
Right,
it.
And yeah, also, and it was kind of an editorial idea to do it. And I love Denny.
Well,
I
the general population, guy, so. It's like you killed Burt Ward.
Yeah. Well, you killed Robin. Just,
right.
Yeah, period.
It's
Robin. Yeah,
it
exactly.
doesn't matter who's wearing
I
the mask.
I killed Burt Ward for you.
Speaking
man.
Of Denny O'Neill,
gosh,
what
yes.
about O'Neill and...
and Collins on the question.
The question's great, but Green Arrow, Green Lantern.
You know, that wasn't that long of a run.
No,
it was
but
a
it was a very significant run.
Sure,
that's,
but it wasn't,
yeah, it wasn't
you know,
that long.
It was only about a year.
Well, they don't have to be long to be great.
Shut up.
That's what my mom says.
Well, here you go. Sal, why don't you read this next one? And this is where we really start to kind of listen.
This is G Mateus. G Mattius? G, I don't know.
G Mattis is how you pronounce it. It's like Day Mad.
All right, he actually broke them down. He must have talked to Chris before any of us did because he broke them down.
Yeah, he got it. He understood where
I
was coming
from. Books that creators didn't create.
You complete me, G. Mateus.
Miller, Jansen, run on Daredevil. We talked about
great.
That.
Great. Excellent. We didn't mention Jansen, though. He's
Yeah, we should certainly mention him. Claremont's run on Uncanny.
Sure.
Yep.
Wade Garney on Captain America, first run 444 to 454.
Ten great issues that were interrupted by Heroes Go Away or whatever.
Reborn.
Go away.
Heroes Go Home.
Disappear.
Go away.
Yeah, good idea, but I'm taking over.
Money-grubbing stunts that summer.
Simonson on Thor.
Yes. Yes,
that's
sir.
Great, that's
yes,
still
sir.
To me
well,
the
it's
best.
Brilliant.
Defining.
Yeah.
Defining awesome. Run
well,
on
Well, again, I'd say Kirby was your defining run, but I think...
I didn't grow up with it, though. I didn't grow up with Kirby's, though.
Yeah.
I grew up with Simonson.
I understand.
For my pretty much my entire life, it's Walt Simonson's Thor.
It was
Thor
brilliant.
To me.
It was brilliant.
Can I tell you a secret?
Sure.
I hated Jack Kirby when I was a kid. I couldn't stand his artwork. I didn't like it.
You are
who will
son
teach
of a
the
bitch.
Children?
I'm
but
kidding.
I grew to appreciate it.
Yeah, no kidding. No, it's his mic.
Jack Kirby.
I know.
Well, we all say that, but as a 10-year-old kid, I'm looking
you
at
like
it and going,
it? Too ugly? Too scary?
Oh, I like it now.
Right.
But
sure.
But as a kid, I didn't care for it. Yeah. I don't know why. I just didn't
like
it.
It
was wonky.
No, I understand. I mean, when I was a real little kid, but I think everyone was like that. DC was safe.
Well, I think that's,
DC
that,
was safe. Marvel was messy. And then when you were like 12 and your life
you
was starting
to get
messy
in
adolescence, you appreciated the mess.
Perez Wolfman on Titans. We talked about that. Wolfman Colon on Tomb of Dracula.
Yes.
Historic. Historic.
Good stuff.
G. Colon at his artistic best. And I love his Daredevil, but... He went other places in Tomb of Dracula.
Robinson on Starman.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
but he did create that.
Yeah. Books that they did create, Sim on Cerebus, of course. Sakai on Usagi, Yojimbo, we said that. Larson on Savage Dragon.
Mm-hmm. A much longer run, by the way, than
it should have been.
Than Bagley and Bendis.
Yeah,
he's, 128 or something now?
I don't know.
Content to write the dragon till the day he dies.
I got enough of it after, I think, the first...
25.
Something like that. More on
that's
Stranger
his book.
Paradise.
That's his book, and he's been on it forever.
Let's see. Where are some here that we haven't?
Do you think that he has to like keep pitching that book to himself? So, Eric, do you think
it's a good book?
No, I don't think he does.
I just wish
he writes it whenever he feels like it. He writes whenever he feels like it. He's not on a monthly schedule anymore.
We're getting down to the end of the list. Do we want to just look for ones that we haven't talked about?
John Byrne on Fantastic Four.
Pop Ninja. I completely agree with Sim Cerebus and Yusugi.
I guess not.
We haven't mentioned Alan Moore on the Swamp Thing.
He said Eisner on Invisibles. Alan Moore Swamp Thing. That's one I want to talk about.
Redefining. Not defining, but redefining.
Redefining, and I think that's really kind of what broke Vertigo.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there wouldn't be a Vertigo if it wasn't for Alan Moore Swamp Thing. Yeah.
And I think for that, it created so... It opened the door for so many different things.
Brilliant. I mean,
amazing.
Well,
the cool thing
was
Rick Veitch took over and was really carrying on the same vibe, and it was still... And I'm glad that DC is finally trading that end of the run because... It was great. It was still really, really interesting and good stuff. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, why don't you start with Papercut and just run it right into Equinox? And I think
mention Greg Rucka on Wonder Woman from J. Ren.
Is
that a great run?
I think it was a distinct run. I don't know. I'd say Greg Rucka's Batman has been a very interesting run, and it's been spread over a lot of different books.
Yeah.
But I think just his touching the character, I think, has been very significant in the post-Dixon world.
Post-Dixon. Sorry about that.
All right.
I would agree. All
right.
Missed the names.
I'm not going to argue.
Yeah, go ahead. Start with the Sal.
John Byrne on Fantastic Four, of course.
Yep.
No matter what he says, it's the second best Fantastic Four run ever. Claremont on Byrne on Uncanny X-Men, of course. Peter David on Incredible Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
We've touched on that. Ellison Cassidy on Planetary.
Well, it's their own characters.
Yeah, it's their own characters. It's a great...
I think it's brilliant.
But it's read it if you 25 issues over 12 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, but it's still brilliant, though.
No question.
I think it's
love
gonna,
the book.
Yeah, it's going to be there with Preacher and Sandman as a very like classic...
Yeah.
Non-DC,
yeah, because the first
DC
issue will be a classic by the time the last one's ever out.
Exactly.
It'll be an antique.
Walt Simonson on Thor, Wolfman and Perez, Teen Titans, we've talked about. O'Neill and Adams, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, we talked about that. Azzarello and Rizzo on 100 Bullets.
Once again, great classic. Self-contained, finite series, but it's going to be a classic,
sure,
I think.
Sure, we'll end at 100.
And I think that
will
Azarillo
it be a classic,
will,
though? Because yeah, and I only say that I think not the quality of the book in any way, but the
the durability?
No, the how many people actually know of it or read it or how popular that book is.
Much like Sandman and Preacher and things like
it'll
that,
grow,
it'll have a nice long
it'll have
life
a nice long
in
cult.
Trades.
Yeah, I think
and
it'll
I think
have
the
cult.
The trades do great, and the trades do great internationally.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, Azzarello is...
All right.
Huh?
Roger Stern on the Avengers?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure. Roger Stern always underrated in terms of how many great
you
runs
see what
he's
writing
on,
now?
Yes.
It's
Darkman versus
Army of Darkness.
Yeah, Army of Darkness.
And with Kurt Busiek.
Right.
They worked together on...
Avengers.
Yeah. Martz on Green Lantern.
Ron Mars, yeah, the Kyle, yeah,
Mars,
Kyle,
yeah, Mars.
Kyle Rayner is Ron Mars' character,
yeah.
and no one did it better.
So we have him.
Winnick did a good job, but not as good as Mars.
Yeah. Bendis Bagley, Ultimate Spider-Man, of course. That's what kind of
prompted the topic.
Yeah. Obviously,
Ennis and Dillon on Preacher.
Neil Gaiman on Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about Preacher. Like, I know it breaks the rule, but I mean, you know,
to me, Preacher is like one of the best.
I think 100 Bullets will be held in kind of the same esteem as Preacher.
Exactly.
Has.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
It's going to be that kind of epic run.
Yeah, you're probably right, yeah. That it will grow. Its popularity will grow as the longer from
it
we
like
are.
Preacher,
like
and
Preacher
like
did.
Preacher, rather, it's impenetrable to try and jump on now.
Right.
With 25 issues to go. But, you know, by
once
all means, start with Volume 1, and you've
get
got
the
nine,
omnibus,
you've got
the
trades
absolute edition when they put it out.
God, yeah, it's going to end up being... You know, at least 14 or 15 trades.
It's a short box.
I think 14.
Preacher, but Preacher to me is like one of the best runs for two guys that just I don't know that book was just so good.
Do you read 100 Bullets?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah.
No, I'm not comparing it. I'm just talking about Preacher itself. I'm not comparing it in any way.
I think that was
no. I love
100
Bullets. I'm not saying.
Yeah.
anything about 100 Bullets bad.
No, Preacher's, Preacher's amazing. Preacher's a classic southwestern crazy tale. You know, I wanted when they announced it. Ennis was going
to
be on Ghost
but to
Rider,
me, it's just
hoping
those guys
kind of preacherized
yeah,
Ghost Rider.
Yeah,
I was.
And he didn't.
No, he didn't.
But you know, another thing. Hellblazer. There's been a lot of good runs on Hellblazer.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, from Jenkins to Azzarello,
Jamie
to Delano, Anis,
and Delano.
And,
oh,
and,
yeah.
And I mean, that book for
Mike
it's
Carey.
230 issues now.
Is it really?
Tim Bradstreet and I always talk because we were in college together, and when Moore created Constantine and Swamp Thing. And it was so funny when I saw him for the first time since college in like 2000 or 2001, and he was signing a Hellblazer cover. And he's like, John, you remember this? He's like, shit, we grew up like reading this character. And I was said, like, one day I'll actually be able to work on this character. And I said, yeah, man. And he goes, and now I've been doing it for years. He goes, I love it. And
wow.
It's so cool. I mean, it was just, yeah, there's a fan who really did get to work on really like one of the characters that really like captured his imagination. And, you know, I think Tim was up to the task.
Oh, absolutely.
His covers for Hellblazer were always just brilliant.
Just like his covers for Punisher are.
Pretty much everything.
Yeah, all
Tim's
of
them.
Anything that Brad's
made.
Equinox, that was basically Paper Cut and then Equinox. It's
Mark
Waid,
Legion of Superheroes, we talked about that.
The ones I think are interesting are, he mentions Demanis and Giffen on Justice League,
mm-hmm.
Davis and Claremont on Excalibur, Davis, Moore, Delano on
Captain Britain,
which I think is very interesting.
Micheline and Romita Jr. Leighton on Iron Man.
Yeah, that's the one. Leighton especially. I mean,
Leighton
his
Micheline
that was fantastic stuff. I loved that run.
Character-defining run.
Yeah, absolutely.
Demanis and Giffen on Justice League is another one of those books that I think is so different. It was so different at the time, and it's still so different even just compared to stuff now that it's amazing to think that
was
out.
It was definitely genre-busting at the time.
Yeah.
It's really sad what they're doing to all those characters right now in the DC Universe, though.
Well, they were around before that, too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, and nobody really did much with them for a long time afterwards. And I also think that the joke literally wore thin. And that's why I'm glad they had those 10 years off to come back and do such a great thing in the miniseries and also with the Defenders and now in Hero Squared for both.
Yeah, I mean, people love Ted Kord, but no one wants to buy a
Blue Beetle.
Ted Kord book.
Well,
is
anybody buying the new Blue Beetle book?
Nah. He better watch out.
What's
he's going to get a bullet in the brain.
We have stretched this one out pretty good. We could go on and on, obviously, if we're talking about, you know, comic history. But let's wrap things up, and each one of you give me your favorite run in comics. We'll start with Tigger Simon.
Actually, right now, I think my favorite run's got to be Robinson on Starman. I mean, that I didn't read it in the comics. I read it in the trades, and I just thought from beginning to end, it was like the perfect story. I mean, it had a beginning and a middle and an end, and it even had a denouement. I mean, we had the end, and then we had the long farewell. It was a fantastic book, and it was really great for me because of the interaction between the father and the son. It was a very realistic relationship between those two characters.
Fantastic. Tom?
I'm going to pick Jeff Johns, and you've already heard me on various podcasts say why I like Jeff Johns.
On what book?
The Flash.
Oh, okay.
I know everything.
Book. Oh, hey, I've got a present for Tom.
What?
What is it?
What is
it? It's a gun. He's going to shoot me. Oh, it's a Flash toy.
Oh, how cute is that?
Born to Run.
Not very fast.
Born to Run.
Yeah, maybe not.
A broken Flash toy, apparently.
Look at him go.
All right, thank you, Chris. It's a life-size Flash. Blow up doll.
Right, Sal?
Oh, God. I don't. It's so hard. I mean, my default is probably, you know, Claremont Byrne on X-Men. I mean, I don't.
You and me both, brother.
But there's some Spider-Man stuff in there that I'd have to
put
in there.
You can't. You have pictures.
Yeah. Well, I know, but it's like so kind of cliche to pick that one. But
too bad.
Hey, it defined comics for me. And if for no other reason I can pick that Byrne Claremont on X-Men, it's comfort food for me whenever I want to go back and just read good old comics. I can always go back and
no,
and read
you know
those.
What? I'm going to change mine because honestly, the one.
I'm
sorry.
Sorry.
You know,
I
know. No, Miller's Daredevil.
I was going to say,
that's got to be for me because that's the one character to this day that from then till now I've never lost interest in.
There you go. John?
I am going to say Denny O'Neill, but not for the obvious like Batman and Green Lantern. I will say Denny O'Neill and Dennis Cowan on The Question. I think redefined the character. It was a Ditko character. He took it a different way, a very different way, if you know the politics of Steve Ditko.
And that was a Charlton character, right?
That's right, yeah. He created it for Charlton and for Dick Giordano specifically.
Right, right.
And he was – it was great. It was – I love how Simon is like the cop of the show. Let's not play with the toys, boys. We are broadcasting.
I'm just so amazed. He's so
unraveled. Go, Flash. Go.
It's three of his songs.
Is it Barry, Wally, or Bart?
It's Wally.
That's Wally.
That's very interesting.
It's Waringo Wally.
Wow.
I thought it was JLA, the cartoon Wally, is what it looked like to me.
But it took... It took Rucka bringing Denny O'Neill's Question back in 52 to remind everyone how great of a run it is. And in fact, O'Neill is going to have a novelization of his first few issues of The Question, and I want to say it's called... Now I'm forgetting the title. It's called Ass Reaming. And do you have Tentacle Fucker and Ass Reaming? I'll wait.
Is that stuff traded? The Question stuff?
No, it isn't. But there's going to be this paperback novel that's coming out in November that O'Neill wrote that basically is the story of what he did with Vic Sage, awesome. and how he changed The Question and how Rucka continues to honor it. Like I said, in the pages of 52.
Well, we'll have to talk about Greg.
Next
week. Did you?
I haven't announced it. We'll announce it in the show.
Sorry to spoil you.
All right, guys. No, we haven't spoiled anything. All right, guys, really fun topic. I think this is totally one that we can come back. Maybe we will come back and talk about great finite series.
Creator-owned
series.
Great creator-owned.
All right, guys, thanks a lot. Thanks for everyone on the forum. Great posting this week. Let's move over to the news desk. It is time for Wire to Wire comic news.
These are your top headlines for the week of September 11th, 2006. The Civil War Choosing Sides one-shot features five stories that shine a spotlight on wild cards and impact players whose part in the Civil War has yet to be told, including a Daredevil, Iron Fist, U.S. Agent, the irredeemable Ant-Man, Venom, and even Howard the Duck. The five stories in the one-shot are written by Michael Avon Oeming, Matt Fraction, Robert Kirkman, Ty Templeton, and Mark Guggenheim, and penciled by Wynell Yu, David Aja, Phil Hester, Scott Collins, and Ty Templeton. Civil War Choosing Sides one-shot is on sale October 25th. Oni Press, writer Anthony Johnston, artist Chris Mitten, and cover artist Ben Templesmith are all elated by the reaction to their new post-apocalyptic adventure series, Wasteland, and excited about the continued development of the book and the growing fan community. Astute readers may notice that despite Wasteland's ongoing nature, that there was no new issue offered for this coming November. But fans shouldn't fret because this is a planned skip month and the series will be back in December with issue number 5. For more information on Wasteland, visit www.thebigwet.com. And for more information on other Oni Press comics and graphic novels, visit www.onipress.com. Ed Brubaker won the 2006 Harvey Award for Best Writer for his work on Captain America as Marvel Comics dominated the Harvey Awards for the first time. Marvel won 5 Harveys altogether, the publisher's highest total ever. Marvel took home 4 in 1994. They included some very key awards such as Best New Series with Young Avengers, Best Continuing Series with The Runaways, Best New Talent. Roberto Aguirre-Sacosa shared the award with R. Kikua Johnson, and Best Colorist, Laura Martin, for her work on Astonishing X-Men. DC Comics artists and writers landed 4 awards, including Best Artist with J.H. Williams III for Wildstorm's Promethea, Best Cover Artist, James Jean for Fables, Best Anthology, Solo, and Best Special Award for Humor in Comics, Kyle Baker for Plastic Man. For a list of more Harvey Award winners, check out the full story at www.aroundcomics.com. Runaways fans have been in a panic since Brian K. Vaughan announced last week that he and artist Adrian Alfana would be leaving the title they started after issue number 24. But great news has arrived as Vaughan has helped handpick his successor, the superior writer behind the best-selling Astonishing X-Men, Joss Whedon. Joss has long been a fan of the series, started by Brian K. Vaughan and Adrian Alfana. He even wrote a piece of fan mail, which has since been collected in the Runaways Volume 1 hardcover, where he implored Marvel to continue the series when he learned that the series was going to end at issue 18. Runaways soon returned with a second volume, and the title has continued to be a favorite of fans and critics to this day. Joss Whedon's first issue will be Runaways number 25 when he is joined by new regular artist Michael Ryan. Here's a few announcements from Marvel made at the recent Baltimore Con. Spider-Man, Back in Black. Spider-Man will be back in black in February. The black costume makes a return, but is it the symbiote, or is it just a black costume? CBR.com has a great interview with Axel Alonso with all of your answers. Thor will return in a new ongoing series written by J. Michael Straczynski. Alan Davis, one of comic book industry's most well-respected and sought-after creators and longtime fan favorite, has renewed his exclusive agreement with Marvel. A number of spin-off series will follow in the wake of the cosmic event Annihilation. Nova will get a new ongoing by Dan Abnett and Andy Landing, while Quasar gets a 5-issue limited series. There will be two Heralds of Galactus one-shots, one focusing on Fire Lord and Terrax, and the other on Silver Surfer and Stardust, and Super Skrull Armada. Following the conclusion of Planet Hulk, World War Hulk breaks out with Greg Pak continuing to write Big Mean Green's Adventures with art by John Romita Jr. More on this story later. Marvel and Dabble Brothers have signed a publishing agreement. This October, Marvel will release collected editions of Red Prophet and Magician Apprentice, collecting the sold-out first two issues of each. Both books will be available on October 11th. In late October, Anita Blake, a Vampire Hunter in Guilty Pleasures number 1, will see release. This miniseries is based on the popular series of novels by Laurel K. Hamilton. Loners is a 6-issue miniseries spinning out of Runaways, with C.B. Cebulski writing and Carol Moline handling the art. More omnibus editions, including one for the Frank Miller run on Daredevil, as well as a massive volume of early Spider-Man stories. The Amazing Spider-Man omnibus will feature Amazing Fantasy number 15, Amazing Spider-Man numbers 1 through 38, Amazing Spider-Man annuals 1 and 2, plus stories from Fantastic Four annual number 1, Strange Tales annual number 2, and the covers to Marvel Tales annual 1 and 2, and Marvel Tales number 3 through 28. DC announced an assortment of new collections coming out in 2007, including a 2-volume showcase collection of Who's Who from the late 80s and a 4-volume color hardcover project entitled The New Gods Omnibus, which will collect Jack Kirby's entire Fourth World Saga. The New Gods Omnibus should be, the editor feels, the definitive collection of Jack Kirby's Fourth World Saga from start to finish. The omnibus will include the full run of The New Gods and The Hunger Dogs, but will also include, as Brewer said, assorted other issues which contain pieces of the larger whole. In other news, revealed at DC's retailer presentation, Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill's The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, The Black Dossier graphic novel, which was solicited for an October release, has been delayed indefinitely. According to DC, a new in-store date will be announced as soon as possible. As a result of the delay, the book will be made returnable for retailers at a later date. Straight out of the Civil War, Jonah Hex, number 13, presents part one of a horrifying 3-part tale never seen before, the weird Western origin of Jonah Hex himself. The arc features the amazing artwork of European comic book legend Jordi Bernay, along with a thrilling story from series writers Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. Writers Gray and Palmiotti have brought Jonah Hex back with all the fury, dirt, and blood that made him one of the most popular characters DC Comics has ever seen. Don't miss this exciting, untold origin story of the old-time West's most notorious hero. The Untold Origin of Jonah Hex is available November 1st. Last week, Marvel announced that John Romita Jr. will be returning to the pages of The Green Goliath in next year's summer blockbuster, World War Hulk. Having not drawn the Hulk since 2002, Romita has kept busy. He's currently finishing up The Eternals with writer Neil Gaiman. The double-sized finale is scheduled to be in stores in November, and he has a few pages left before he completes the Stan Lee-written Fantastic Four, The End. So with all these irons in the fire, what possessed a John Romita Jr. to come back to the Hulk? I didn't ask Joe or Dan Buckley for this particular assignment, Romita said. We all sat down to discuss post-Eternals work, and they, as I seem to remember, thought this idea up on the spot. Not the creative idea, but the idea of me doing it. I remember their faces. They just grinned and said, "Hey, how about this?" And at that point, I grinned myself, loving the last time I worked on the Hulk, and agreed. However, I do recall asking, no, begging, for a return to a Spider-Man title. World War Hulk will smash into comic stores next year. These have been your top headlines. For the full version of these and other stories, go to www.aroundcomics.com, your source for the best in comics news, reviews, and opinions.
All right, those are your top headlines for the week. We'll start at the top here. The Civil War, Choosing Sides, One Shot. Looks like some great talent is going to be on this one. Some interesting characters. You got Omen, Fraction.
Isn't it One
Shot? Kirkman.
Is it multiple?
It is a one shot with five stories.
It sounds like a Marvel version of Countdown or Brave New World.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, look at the names on this. Omen, Fraction, Kirkman, Ty Templeton, Mark Guggenheim, who I'm really liking his stuff.
Or the Duck, Venom.
I'm just happy that Omen is getting so many more opportunities to write mainstream Marvel, because I only think he's getting better as a writer, and I think he's up to the task. I'm glad they're finally letting him do it.
So, I mean, definitely one I'm going to pick up. I'm picking up all the Civil War stuff, so that's a given for me. But I think it's going to visit some characters that people may be interested in that aren't getting a whole lot of screen time in the war. So should be fun. Next story, Oni Press, their book Wasteland is going to take a month off before they gear back up and go to issues 4 and 5. And I'll actually tell you a little bit more about issue number 3 later in the show. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Wink.
Wink, wink. you guys reading Wasteland?
Yep.
I have the first two issues. I haven't had a chance to sit down with them yet. I bought them here last week, actually, and I hear nothing but good things. I heard Anthony on Fanboy Radio talking with Scott Hines, and I'm a huge fan of his and always have been. And
Scott's?
And Anthony's. I just had Scott on my show.
I know you did.
Well, I'll give you the preview. Wasteland 3 is my top of the stack, so we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But yeah,
Wasteland,
that's
another book out from, like, the Ellis crew, kind of Warren Ellis's guys from his board, him and
been
Kieran
talking about
and,
it for 10 years,
and Matt Fraction and all those guys, you know.
And also, I know Rucka really loves Anthony Johnson's writing as well. He's the only other writer that's written Queen and Country.
Declassified Volume 3,
Nick Poole story.
Yes, fantastic piece of
Queen right,
and Country. Work with Norton. Johnson worked with Norton.
Hey, here's a good story. Ed Brubaker won the 2006 Harvey Award for Best Writer. His work on Captain America. Congratulations, Ed. Woo-hoo. And Marvel won, what did they win, 5 Harveys?
5 Harveys.
That's pretty amazing.
5.
Now, are Harveys voted on by fans, or how is the voting? It is, isn't it? I know they're nominated by fans.
I don't know, John. I honestly don't know. I don't have an answer for it.
Or news readers.
I thought,
Not yeah. Newsmakers.
All
right. So, yeah, way to go, Marvel. They 5 and DC 4. And there's some. The story is great because it does talk about a lot of titles that we've mentioned on the show from some smaller publishers. So go check that out.
Well,
everything on the Harveys was worth reading. All
it was interesting.
Did Fialkoff win anything? Did he for Elk's Run? I know it got nominated for a bunch of things.
I did not see Elk's Run as a winner.
Okay.
The full story's online. And there's some stuff from Fantagraphics that won. And okay. Top Shelf one, Tricked one, which was Tricked was awesome.
I thought it was interesting that it was the first time Marvel had ever won that many
Harveys.
Yeah, and they had won 4 before in '94, but 5 was the most they've ever won.
Well, it's been a great year for Marvel.
Yeah,
you look at last year. 2005 was DC's year. Period. They really set. They closed the gap on sales. All of the buzz was
and
DC.
Then they pissed it all away.
Well,
with
no, it's just Marvel really came back with guns blazing, and it's great. I love to see them leapfrog each other.
I think 52 is going to be just fine, and I think when the tally is done, I think 52 will be your winner as far as books, and it certainly helps that it comes out 4 times a month. But I just think
more and more people are going to.
Civil War's
drop
got all the
that
buzz.
Book, drop, you know, because
well,
it's
you
like
know,
too
and,
many
and
books.
I'm not even talking about Civil War. I'm talking
know.
About all the secondary
I know
titles.
Tom likes you know? Like the latest. Right. And I started to get bored with it a little bit, and then I started to like it more again. And I'm hoping it'll continue to
last
just get better.
Last three issues have
been really. Yeah, they have. The Black Adam stuff has been just fantastic. Well,
I might have to go back and take another look at it. I dropped after issue 8 because the only thing I was enjoying was the Question in Montoya.
Yeah, I was in the exact same boat with you until, like Tom said, the last three or four issues have been really good.
Unravel.
I don't even know why we're talking about
52
now.
Well, all right, guys.
Save it for mine. Wink, right. Wink at the end of the show.
To confuse all of the people listening, raise your hand if you're really worried about Runaways whenever they announced that Brian K. Vaughan was leaving. All right,
no,
everyone
has their.
I wasn't worried.
I knew they were going to put somebody huge on.
Yeah, and who'd they put on?
Joss
Whedon. Yeah, it's
boy, from Buffy to the Runaways. Where to go, Josh?
Yeah, you think that book is going to sell?
Joss Whedon could fart on a snare drum, and everyone would.
He's already used that joke.
I know. But he's
right.
Use it every week.
I'm going to boycott it because Mike Norton's not. It, so
I'm still bummed about
I'm
that
not
too.
Gonna, I'm not buying it. Fuck yeah.
But I'll bet you the sales
Screw
numbers
that,
on Runaways Screw are actually
Whedon.
Gonna be better now than they were before,
yeah.
Which is wild.
It's weird, wild stuff.
And
wacky.
I think
we know Mike is Mike Ryan a total newcomer?
No, he's on Excalibur.
Yeah, he was on
okay.
Excalibur.
You know,
Excalibur.
Yeah, I don't. So, you know,
he's
you know
not a big.
You don't read Excalibur.
You know,
I don't read it. If it's got an X in front of it, I don't worry. I don't
Does
read it.
You don't read X Factor.
Read X Factor.
I love Peter and I like the Madrox miniseries. I just don't give a shit.
Read X Factor.
I still don't give a shit.
Read X Factor.
He doesn't want to read it. Get off
read
his
it.
Back.
Read it.
Eventually,
come on, John.
No, eventually I will because I do. I love Peter and I hear it's great.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
I know, but
no, I think this will be a perfect book for Joss Whedon because I think it'll. He loves. I don't know this personally, but
young children.
Yeah, no. I think he writes teenage stories very well. That was the magic of Buffy.
He's young at heart.
I think it'll
you
be
can
perfect.
Just plug in all those same.
Well, Simon,
about the
Buffy
I'm
fan
sure there's someone
all?
That can talk like Xander.
Yeah,
right,
I am
too.
A bit of a Buffy fan. I'm a big fan of Brian K. Vaughan. I have all the issues of Runaways right now. Mm-hmm. I was myself a bit scared. Would have rather them cancel it than put a B-list creator on it, but I'm really glad to hear Joss Whedon's on it.
Well, if they put a B-list creator on it, it would have been canceled.
Yeah.
Well, let's see how well it stays on schedule. I hate to be a cynic, but...
No, I agree with you there, but I'm only getting it in the trades now anyway,
there you go.
So...
Yeah.
Which I'd
like
that's
to
how I've been reading Runaways as well.
Okay, we'll cruise through all these. These are all the Marvel announcements from Baltimore Con. Spider-Man going back to the black costume, perhaps?
Is it a symbiote?
Wow, I wonder. Oh,
is it
yeah.
just a black costume?
It's just not. It's not a coincidence, is it?
The movie.
I don't think so.
It's a movie. Straczynski is gonna be going to Thor,
and he's leaving Fantastic Four.
Four.
Well, it's a nice little path that he's created, starting the story in Fantastic Four, and everyone will follow him to Thor.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious to see who's gonna pick up Fantastic Four. That's the big question.
Well, my guess is Mark
You think Miller. It might be Miller?
I think it might be Miller.
I'm going to write Fantastic
Mark
Four.
Miller. So he's going from
But I don't think,
Fantastic
actually,
Four
that's just
know.
A wild guess, but I don't think
yeah,
it
I think
be.
Actually there's going to probably be somebody in between, just the way Mark was kind of laying out his 2007.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
All right, Alan Davis back with Marvel.
Yeah, and he's doing Fantastic Four, The End. He's writing it and drawing it.
Oh, wait. Stan's not. It's
no,
Spider.
No, that's for no. me. That's Romita Jr. and Stan Lee.
They're doing one also called
that's
Fantastic
right.
Four. The
I'm
end.
Confused.
I don't. I don't know
because
why
they're Marvel and they can. It's just like
well,
know.
I think
because
Stan wanted to do The End, but everybody thought it probably won't sell very well, so we'll put Alan Davis on a
nice.
Book called The End.
Ow!
Alan Davis is awesome in both, basically everything he does. But honestly, I mean, as much as I love his Marvel work, I love his DC work too. I mean,
has he written? I don't.
You know?
I'm just not. I mean, I've
well,
always been
yeah,
Alan Davis.
I mean,
fan
I want to go back to
for
him
his
and,
art.
Yeah, I'm saying him and Mike Barr back in the day on Detective on Batman was just fantastic.
Has he written
so
a lot of stuff?
He wrote The Nail, that one.
Yeah, he wrote The Nail.
Okay,
yeah,
okay,
those two
okay.
Elseworlds, yeah, yeah. I mean, and I liked his, I loved his Killraven. Yeah. And he wrote that Killraven miniseries.
Yeah, so. Okay.
But he's just
okay.
a gorgeous, he's a gorgeous,
oh, yeah.
he's a gorgeous man.
He's a gorgeous
all right,
man.
Annihilation, you know, Marvel is really dumping a lot into the cosmic stuff. And
Annihilation.
We're going to see some spinoff series from Annihilation, Nova, Quasar.
Abnett and Lanning are an excellent writing team. Honestly, I feel the same way about Nova that you just kind of emoted their self.
I can't.
It just hasn't been. I mean, it was a Wolfman character, and it was never handled better than when Wolfman was writing it. But I do think Abnett and Lanning are excellent.
There's
they're
two guys
team.
That if they write sci-fi stuff, I'll check it out. It's Wolfman and Starlin. Other than that, meh. No thanks.
All right.
Well, I just think there's too many events out there, and Annihilation and Planet Hulk.
Has anybody been reading Annihilation?
The people that I know that do read it enjoy it.
Yeah.
And say it has been
Tom,
great. And I, you know,
Simon,
I picked up
Chris,
the first one.
Yeah, I hated it.
And it's just kind of like, man, whatever. It.
I
don't want to rip on it. I mean, it's.
Well, I'm with Sal.
I'm not
a big
space fan.
I think
so I guess
there are
it just isn't for me.
Certain
yeah,
hands on certain cosmic creators in Marvel that make sense and. I just, I mean, I don't give a shit about the
See,
Super
a lot of
Scroll.
The things,
I don't care, you know,
right.
I mean, you know.
I've
the thing
always
with
liked
me
Super
is,
Scroll,
like, a lot of the sort of cliches in space comics bother me more than the cliches in other comics.
Yeah, I can't stand when, like, they use made-up words in regular conversation. Like,
so
they'll just throw
boats.
One in. Like, let's go take a look
a
ride in my... Yeah,
oh.
You know what
I
mean? Oh,
I kicked
know,
him in the zordles.
I hate that. I just, it's just like... just
you don't like that on, like, Farscape when they say Frell instead
no,
of fuck?
No, I hate it.
Say
I
frack
I
instead
hate
of fucking
it.
Galactic.
If it, you know, sometimes it's okay, but it's like sometimes... it's just,
that.
They just choose, like, this completely...
That. Mother fracker.
Frackin' hell.
Exactly. I like it, too.
I don't know. The only one I ever... The only one I ever liked was, like, you know, Lobo could pull that stuff off because it was, you know, goofy. Anyway, and he
Bastich.
Was just Bastich. That was about the only thing I could stand because it was close to you know.
Yeah,
something,
know
but sometimes it's just like, why bother? You know, it doesn't.
Oh,
you know,
I wreck you.
But it's kind of like it's like Star Trek, the classic three, where it's like you know two 20th century references, and then the one from like the you know the 28th century, where
yeah.
it's like you know the Magna Carta, the Constitution, the Treaty of Rigel VI. You know, and it's like
yeah, but
you know, and it's like oh okay. You know, I always love that.
But at least they
know?
Did it in a way that it sort of made sense. It's like a lot of times you just see these guys that they're you know it's like common everyday things like shoes, and they turn it into a different word that does you know and. It's like,
I got my garbles.
Yeah, exactly.
Greatest playwright, Shakespeare, Neil Simon, Ool of Nimbus 12.
Exactly.
Oh, Ool was excellent, man.
Okay. Marvel and Dable Brothers, publishing agreement. Sal, I know that you had talked quite a bit with me this week about how you think this is a really big deal.
I did?
Yes, you did.
I love that news. Earlier this week, we were hanging out.
You know, this is really important, man. Don't put the work down. Dable Brothers and Marvel.
Well, no, I think it's.
I want
it's,
all the news stories.
Well, you know,
like,
hold
you know,
the
what's
fold,
interesting?
Sister.
A couple of weeks ago, we're talking about like we were when we had Norton. And,
I totally
and Chris
threw
Pan.
You under the bus.
Yeah, you did. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
This week, you told me it was important.
Yeah. I don't know. But no, the interesting thing I find about it is that we were talking a few weeks back about how the big two should do other than superhero books.
Yeah, break
and
out of
since
the
then we've seen more crap or not crap, but more stuff coming out of those companies that have nothing to do with superheroes.
That's true.
And this is one of those
well,
things
I think
where
it's because of us.
It's the import
obviously.
Of a lot.
Obviously,
the Dable Brothers have really sort of made a living off of getting authors and adapting their novels. That's kind of what they do. And now Marvel is they're going to be an imprint for that for Marvel. They've signed a partnership, and you're just gonna and I just think Marvel's been doing a lot of stuff like this where they're trying to spread out and they're trying to do other things than just superhero books.
Like, wasn't Omen had something that he was working on with the Dowell Brothers that's now gonna be at Marvel. So. And I can't remember what it was. I don't know.
This reminded me of
Templar Mice. It wasn't that, was it?
No.
This reminded me of the ElfQuest creators, the Peenies, Richard and I forget the wife's name, bringing ElfQuest to DC as they did years ago. And
same kind of
interesting.
I don't know if it's important, but
well, all of the
interesting.
The Anita Blake. That's gonna be in our Marvel imprint now. Sure, so
I thought that was Anita Baker, Vampire Hunter, the fine '80s songstress.
Anita Baker, God.
From beginning to end.
No, I think if I'm rephrasing this correctly from our conversation, is that it's important.
You tell me.
No, it is important because Marvel is showing that they are going to break outside of the superhero genre, and they're going to be tapping into some different markets. And it's not on here, but they're also doing soap opera books.
I don't think they haven't wanted to. I mean, same thing with King, doing their King project with Dark Tower and everything. I mean, that's the I think everybody knows it's like we got to get comics in the hands of people other than the comic book fans.
Right.
What do we do? And I think these are the kind of moves that are showing, that they're
just doing it. They're doing it.
Yeah. That's why it's important.
Sal is important.
Come on,
Sal's
man.
Right. It's important.
Damn right I
will. Way to go, Sal.
Thank you.
You're thinking.
C.B. Cebulski is going to be writing a 6-issue miniseries that's spinning out of the pages of Runaways.
Funny man.
With Carol Moline? Moline, I'm assuming. Is that a guy?
Like Moline Allen.
Carol?
In Alabama.
Carol? Like Gary Bates?
The next one, something I'm really excited about, is the new slate of Marvel omnibuses that have been announced. We're going to see a Frank Miller Daredevil omnibus.
Buy it.
You bet.
Amazing Spider-Man, buy it.
I'm waiting for a better version.
What's going to be bigger than the omnibus?
When they tattoo it inside my brain.
I was going to say, the virtual reality one?
The virtual reality one in my brain.
The Amazing Spider-Man. You knew it was coming.
That's going to be cool. It's Amazing Fantasy 15 and then 1 through 38 of Amazing Spider-Man and the annuals 1 and 2.
And a Fantastic Four annual number
Strange
1.
Strange Tales annual number 2. That's the all covers the main. That's cool. That's
going to
be really
Ditko,
cool.
It's all Ditko, ain't it?
Huh?
It's all Ditko.
Yeah.
Well, earlier this week you were telling me that you're going to buy everyone a copy.
I believe so, yeah.
Earlier this week, you said you're going to buy all of us a copy.
Yeah, well, I was lying.
Yeah, thanks, Seth.
The same conversation.
So, I mean, hey, now we've got, the X-Men, Fantastic Four, and now you knew Spider-Man was coming.
The Eternals.
So, Eternals and Alias was the first one. Which one of these things is not like the others? Glad it was made into, the omnibus format. But you figure that the Avengers omnibus can't be far behind.
That I'd like to see. That would be cool. Sal Buscema stuff.
Oh, yeah. You figure, are they going to start with the Iron Man stories, though, leading into that.
Well, I mean,
or are they going to start with Avengers?
Start with
one?
The Iron Man and the Hulk and
Thor.
The origins of all those characters leading into the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about?
if they do
an Avengers omnibus,
I think it would start with Avengers.
Yeah,
one.
I don't think.
Well,
I don't think there's any.
No, I mean, look at the Essentials. They work fine on their own.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool though.
For you.
DC did have a couple of announcements. I think
what are they going to put in the Hulk?
Well, I think the thing. Omnibus. Well, I think always the thing to remember is they always don't like to have a bunch of artists in one of their trades and stuff, and that's why it was Don Heck doing the Avengers as opposed to, well, I guess Don Heck was doing the did Iron Man. I don't think he did Thor though.
No,
the original Thor.
I don't remember.
I know Lieber wrote scripted the story. Lee wrote the story, but Lieber scripted a lot of early Thor. And I know Kirby was definitely
Kirby,
the artist.
Kirby. Yeah.
But it was either Dick Ayers inked over Heck or over Kirby.
All right, you nerd. Jesus. That's enough of this talk.
There's like smoke coming out of his ears.
I know.
The old-timer's show.
Well, as I recall, Busy Arnold hired Will Eisner in 1938, and they did Hawks of the Sea. Then,
all right.
DC
also announced a 2-volume showcase collection of Who's Who from the late 80s and a 4-volume color hardcover project entitled New Gods Omnibus, which will collect Jack Kirby's entire Fourth World Saga. And that's the interesting, cool. The guy, it wasn't our news, but there was a story on, I think, CBR or something, they or an interview with the editor who's putting that together.
Brewer, yeah.
And
George
he,
Brewer.
Yeah, and he was saying he's having a hard time because it's... the covers,
yeah.
and he didn't know what to pick because that was done.
You got
to
put everything in.
Yeah, and
you
it's like
put fucking everything.
Well, but how do you do it? How do you put it into an you know in a? It's four volumes.
It's like 400-200 pages.
But there's eight covers. I don't know. He's trying to figure it out, but it should be interesting one way or the other.
It's going to be a lot of Kirby goodness.
And also, man, just
you can
like
do wraparounds.
Weird, fun stories like dead end stories that went nowhere, like Dead Man getting a human body. That was part of the Fourth World, and it was going to be this whole new direction for Dead Man that Kirby came up with, and Infantino's like,
nope.
I don't fucking think
I
so.
Yeah,
I don't fucking think so. It. Nice try.
Wow. Imagine what could have happened to DC if a lot of that stuff was built upon, you know.
Oh, yeah, but again, you know, that's kind of the misnomer, because Kirby went there because he was fed up with Marvel, and Infantino was happy to have him, but the shit didn't sell.
Yeah.
It really didn't sell. You know, well enough for them to continue. That's why the Fourth World ended. I mean, it's brilliant, and we can look back on it, but that's the reality of the time.
Yeah, now you get to see it all in
the Jimmy Olsen collection. The Jimmy Olsen Kirby stuff is just fantastic. It's crazy.
Yes.
It's just so fucking nuts. That's where Grant Morrison is getting, I think, a lot of his crazy from. And
oh,
stuff.
Sure. The cross-dressing Jimmy Olsen?
Well, that was earlier.
Other story.
That was more
Alan Moore deal?
Alan Moore.
The Black Dossier?
Yeah, I was really excited to see that, and now it's delayed indefinitely.
Well, which
I've already paid for it.
Oh, no, that's not true. Oh, no, it'll come
up.
I think it's Kevin O'Neill. I mean, and it's not a knock against Kevin O'Neill, but he's like Brian Boland. It takes him
a long
time.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's...
And it'll come out eventually.
Is it going to come out from DC?
Yeah, I think it will. I really think this is just like he's not done yet, kind of in the same way that our guy Walt Simonson has been taking so long with the Michael Moore Elric from Michael Moorcack.
Well, when they announced it,
like
my first thought was it's not going to come out on time. I was just like,
yeah.
It's not going to. I'm like,
well, I couldn't believe that it was going to be. I'm like, wow, that's awesome. I can't wait to get it. And then
I wonder how much new material is really in this because, I mean, I
thought it was.
I think there's going to be new stuff, but I'm saying how long the actual story is going to be because it really isn't it.
It's not
graphic.
There's
a story, but then really it's more of a reference book,
right.
And it's more the behind the scenes stuff than it really is a graphic novel proper.
Sure. Yeah,
and it looks like Alan Moore's moving a lot of his stuff to Top Shelf.
The next
volume is going to be Top Shelf. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's done.
Good company.
All right, Jonah Hex.
Yay!
Straight out of A Civil War.
Straight out of Civil War. The Civil War.
Oh, the real one.
The real Civil War. That's
the
great,
original.
great press release from DC.
Civil War Bulletin.
Yeah, and that's how it was released, as the Civil War Bulletin from DC Comics.
Hex. Jordy Brunet.
Great things about Jonah Hex.
Brilliant artist, Jordy Brunet. I mean, he's amazing. Did you see his solo?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And also a great art book of his came out like a year or two ago. And
I haven't
he's just
seen
he's
that.
he's a gorgeous European artist. He's amazing. But I love Jonah Hex. Do you guys read it?
I don't, but you know what? I'm going to start, I think. I'm going to pick up the essentials. I want to start with that.
Every issue is standalone.
The showcase.
The showcase is great, but honestly, the great thing about Palmiotti and Gray is...
It's their single issue.
Yeah, as opposed to 11-page stories, which is what it is in the showcase, they're single issue 22-page stories. They're fantastic.
I always
they're
just
wonderful.
Get one if, like, I just was like, oh, I could afford another book.
I think
I
should
kind of snag one.
I actually saw they're getting ready to do a 3-issue arc, though.
Or the origin of
Yes.
Hex.
Oh, fuck.
Well, and that's fine. I think
it'll be traded, Tom. Don't worry.
I think they were smart. I think it's kind of like a TV show. It's like we want to tell you the... And, in fact, I just spoke to Andrew Cosby, who created Eureka from the Sci-Fi Channel. He said the same thing. He's like, I want the standalone episodes first for people to be able to jump in on the show. We'll get to the mythology eventually. But first, let's get people used to what we're trying to do each week. And I think they did that in a very smart way with Jonah Hex. It evokes the weird Western tales that it came from, the original series. And they've had wonderful artists on it. They've been very entertaining stories. It's not as gritty as Loveless, but it's gritty in its own way. It's a little more campy. Yeah, and it's almost, I hate to say it, because there is good violence in there, and I think it's an interesting story. But it's a more mainstream story than I think Loveless is. I think Loveless is a more complex story.
Right.
But right. I think Jonah Hex is great.
And yes. Our last story for the week.
World War Hulk.
The greatest war?
To end the war to end all wars?
End all wars?
They can just go.
Probably going to end Civil War.
More than likely, yeah.
So the big guy is coming
John
back.
John Romita Jr.
He's Greg Pack.
Greg Pack, John Romita Jr. coming back to the Hulk. Klaus, is he going to be inking it?
Yes.
Oh, that's
wow.
Cool.
Yeah,
awesome.
That's
amazing.
That'll be...
The last,
yeah,
I can only imagine the last panel is going to be Hulk facing the Illuminati, and as he approaches them, they open up their arms to hug him. And then they all hug, and that ends World War Hulk.
Well, the question is, will there be a member of the Illuminati that will die?
That will die from the Hulk? The
Ooh.
Hulk will eat?
Well, that, what I'm saying, does Marvel have the balls to take any member of the Illuminati and really kill them?
Who's it going to be?
The only one I could think of possibly would be Black Bolt.
Nah.
He might be the only one that... I know, because what are the...
Not in a movie. Right.
Well, then,
yeah,
you're
exactly.
Right about that. Yeah, they're not killing Namor.
Well, Namor's not even. Is he even part of the Illuminati
yes,
anymore?
Sure. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Sure, he is.
I thought he kind of walked away from.
He walks away from every media.
But Wolverine.
Well,
I mean,
know,
he's been his involvement in Civil War has been being
well through
Wolverine. Yeah.
Well, in a couple
true
weeks
enough.
When I have my interview with Black Bolt. We can ask
oh,
him.
You got that? You
yes.
got that confirmed?
Yeah, in 3 weeks.
You guys have been emailing
wow,
back and forth.
Wow, very nice.
He's a voracious writer. I can't wait to hear him.
have you ever read anything about?
I
Black
don't
Bolt?
Read. I don't read books with anything black in it.
Oh,
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's a joke.
I
don't understand.
Boy, you
I don't
must
even
have really gotten
is.
A very powerful microphone to be able to pick up the murmurings of a black.
I don't even know. I just only corresponded through him through email, and
he really hasn't read.
Tom's
anything.
Never isn't familiar with Black.
So
Black.
It should be an interesting interview.
He
have fun with
a
that,
lot.
Tom.
He's very descriptive.
Ask him what's with the tuning fork on his head.
Well, do.
And does it pick up cable?
So that's looking forward to World War Hulk. Is that it for the news?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, you know, in that same story though, Romita did talk about his work he's going to do with Mark Millar.
Oh, Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass.
But you told us about it, Wizard World.
I heard it's going to be Kick-Ass. What's it called?
Kick-Ass.
I know it's going to kick-ass. What's it called?
Kick-Ass.
Oh, I'm trying to ask you.
It's gotten into.
Oh, and that's with Klaus Johnson. He's not doing Hulk.
Oh,
it's kick-ass.
Kick-ass.
Fudge. Regardless, the two of them together are always great.
Oh, okay,
Bracken
sorry.
Jimbles.
All right, so.
Got my nards.
that is your top news.
Last ditch.
What?
Last ditch.
Let's move away from the news desk. It is time for Top of the Stack. That's right. It's time for Top of the Stack, our chance to let you, the listener, know what the panel has been reading for the last week. And Top of the Stack is sponsored.
It's brought to you by King Tractor Press. Don't miss two fantastic new titles from King Tractor Press, Family Bones and Devil Water, both available in the September issue of Previews. Family Bones is based on the true story of the oldest married couple on Missouri's death row. It's written by Sean Granger with art by Orlando Baez and Kenneth Landgraf. And Devil Water number one is the horrific and comedic story of Henry Hill's encounters with outlaws, demons, angels, and religious fanatics in the Old West. It's written by Steve Barr with art by Thielman Cheney with a cover by Harry Roland. I have Harry Rollins, and I usually use salve to take care of those. Ask your local retailer for Devil Water and Family Bones, each number one, ask for today. For more information about these exciting new books, visit KingTractorFilms.com.
That spot
wow,
is...
Wow, now that's a pro.
That is copyright Shaky Productions,
that's
2006.
That's a pro right there, my friend.
I even cupped my ear much to evoke the old the golden age of radio.
I really enjoy the satin, the satin jacket you're wearing tonight. That's, you know,
the coconuts. Like
all you radio guys, you wear those satin jackets.
The ascot. Yeah. My cigarette holder.
Wonderful
my
reading.
Brandy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Centris.
It was my pleasure.
You know, it's nice to have some professionalism on the show. All right, guys, top of the stack. Who wants to go first? Tom!
I'm doing Casanova. Just kidding. Satinol once again had to argue. And
that's 2 weeks in a row.
We arm wrestled.
We agree a lot. I'm actually picking 52 Week 19 as my top of the stack. I've been enjoying 52 so far, but this is the first time that I think they legitimately tricked everyone on the internet. And was really interesting because I think people were thinking things were going one way. And they completely sort of faked everyone out. The art is serviceable. I mean, if Keith Giffen wasn't doing the layouts, I think it would be in a lot more trouble. But the writing was incredibly solid. And all I have to say is Skeets is A, a dick, and B, it's kind of scary, actually. So
Skeets?
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah,
so,
so there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting turn of events.
Salazar?
My top of the stack is Casanova number 4 from Matt Fraction and Gabriel Ba. From Image Comics, $1.99. I just absolutely love this book. It's like kind of taking a look at Matt Fraction's mind at work. I mean, it's
scary.
It's so interesting and funny, and it just makes you think about silly stuff and dense. I mean, I don't. Every page, there's just like something else that makes me think. It's like two of the things in this particular issue that I loved the most was one. How Casanova defeats God in a fight,
mm-hmm.
and what this is the kind of things that are in this book. You can think about how to defeat God in a fight, and the second it was what would Johnny Quest be like when he's all grown up, building like fembots and
having sex
it's just so goofy and funny, and the art's amazing, and I, you know it's probably not for everybody the book because it's kind of weird and it almost has an air of, you know. I don't want to say, you know, literature or high art, because it's not really, but because it's so dense, it kind of gives you that feeling.
It feels like a European comic book to me.
Yeah, it definitely,
that's,
yeah.
That's what I like about it.
But it's just so good. It's just such a great book, and I really love it, so.
It's a very dense 16 pages.
Yeah, and for $2, I mean, there's no reason not to get this book.
And Ba's art is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Mine, as we already kind of alluded to, is Wasteland number 3. It is by Anthony Johnston and Christopher Mitten. It is published by Oni Press and runs $2.99. It's the standard price. Black and white art. What?
Does it have a cover? Stuff that's detailed.
Universal price code in the corner.
I'm like, where do they put all
the
information?
Artist and inker on the inside.
He only got to the cover. He didn't read the whole book.
No, I read it. It was great.
Yeah,
okay.
It's like a grade school book report. It has a very nice cover. And
why does everyone have to pick on me?
Charlie Brown.
Because it's fun.
I know. It's easy is what it is. It's easy. Wasteland is a... you actually wrote a great review on the first issue.
Number one?
Yes, yeah. Which you can go back to around comics to the review section.
Yes, I'm usually ahead of the curve when it comes to books like this.
Wasteland, it's a great kind of post-apocalyptic. It's got a Mad Max feel. If you liked the Dark Tower series from Stephen King, it kind of has that. It's almost a Western feel in a...
High Plains Drifter.
Drifter, yeah. You know, Clint Eastwood, Stephen King, and Mad Max is a good way to describe this book. You've got this kind of loner protagonist that hooks up with a town that gets more or less destroyed, and he, because he makes a promise to this person, is going to have to lead them to, you know, some sort of safe haven. And there's a lot of other sub-stories going on. The town that they are going to, it's cut scenes that go to this town, and so you're starting to get an idea of the politics and the political structure that this town is made up of, and the problems that they're getting ready to walk into if they get there. It's just a lot of fun. You know, if you like that whole post-apocalyptic High Plains Drifter type story, it's a lot of fun.
Have you gone to the website, The Big Wet?
TheBigWet.com is a really fun site.
Cool.
Yeah, it's Johnston and Mitten have really put a lot of a marketing push onto this book. They've... you know, hitting all the podcasts. We haven't talked with them yet, but, you know, maybe in the future. But hitting the podcast, hitting all the forums and the websites, and they've done a big marketing push for this. And I hope it's paying off for Oni, because it really is the type of book that I think Oni can put out and be very successful with. So, you know, I would say go to aroundcomics.com and read Sal's Wasteland review. We'll give you a much better and more in-depth idea of what that first issue was like. And I don't want to get a lot away, because
because you know, it's a great story and it unfolds very piece by piece over the three issues so far, and I'm looking forward to how they finish up this first arc. So yeah, Wasteland, good stuff.
Johnson's a great writer; he deserves a bigger audience.
Yes, and read Queen and Country Declassified Volume 3. Yes, John, you got a pick this week?
I do. I have the latest Captain America. I believe it's issue 21.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And it's the end of the London Blitzkrieg story.
21st Century Blitz.
Thank you, 21st Century Blitz, featuring, of course, Union Jack and Starfighter and lots of...
Spitfire.
Starfighter.
Did you read the book?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's got a very nice cover.
How much did it cost?
That's a universal price code.
No, $2.99. As much shit as I just took.
Great,
screw
Mike.
You.
Oh, there you go. Well, yeah, he's even trying to help, and he gets me the book. I appreciate that. I mean, look at that cover. You've got the reverse, if you will, gentlemen, of the classic moment in Cap's history.
Oh, when I saw that cover, I'm
Bucky
like,
on top of the missile trying to deactivate it with Cap hanging on for dear life, and it's or actually, I guess that was what happened. But this time, things changed different. Never mind.
Bizarro John here.
All right, never mind.
Man.
I like the book.
Are you sure? Is Bizarro John dislike it and can't say it?
I think Steve Epting.
Is your blood sugar low?
Yeah, it must be. It must be. No. Another great moment in the Winter Soldier story. There is no resolution. A new dimension to the story comes up at the end. A nice surprise.
And a big ass robot.
And a big ass sleeper. Man, how many fucking sleepers did the Red Skull put all over? My final sleeper agent. Again?
You have had nothing.
You know, and Master Man, and you know, it's hilarious.
At first, I wasn't sure if I was gonna like what he was doing with the Red Skull, and
I love
that.
It.
But yeah, man, by the second or third issue of that, it was really digging in.
Lucan and the Red Skull are a very interesting team, and it continues to be interesting. And I think it's great. And honestly, what's been the wonderful thing is watching the Winter Soldier kind of remember who he is and come out of his thaw. And remember that, you know, it's not Jason Todd and Batman.
Yeah.
You know, Bucky doesn't hate Cap. Bucky still likes Cap.
Right.
Bucky's messed up. But at the end of the day, he's his friend. And it's you appreciate the frustration I think the Cap is going through because he's like, if you just give me a second, we can figure this out.
I still believe in you.
Yeah, exactly. They're a team. I mean, and that's the thing.
Cap,
and
you can tell Cap would never give up on him.
No, you're starting to realize that Bucky feels the same way, and that it's like, no, I'm not a bad guy anymore. I'm still your friend.
And he's trying,
Yeah, so it's just been great. Brubaker's kicking it.
Union Jack is awesome in this book.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to the Union Jack.
Cajun Perkins on Union Jack. I think it's going to be an excellent book.
How do you like the phone call that Bucky made at the end?
Well, that's what I mean. That's the new dimension to the story that I think will take an interesting turn. I think it's going to take a while because I know that Brubaker is going
to
go into...
Right, it's going to have to...
It's going to tie into Civil War in the next few issues, and they're going to examine how Civil War is affecting all of the supporting characters that Cap is dealing with, including Bucky, but Sharon as well.
Right.
And I look forward to that. I just, you know, Brubaker's doing a great job. Captain America is the best it's been in a long time. It might be the best it's ever been. I'm not ready to say that yet.
I know.
But I definitely put this run up there with all the great runs of Captain America.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is a spoiler, but for those of you who've been saying, okay, when is Captain America, the book, going to get into Civil War? The teaser at the very end was next issue, the drums of war begin to pound.
Yep.
So it looks like
Cap
is
pretty evident that
he's going to Civil War.
I mean, even the sort of the newscast at the end of it where it was talking about that.
Brew pretty much laid out. He said the next three issues are Civil War, and 25 takes place seconds or minutes after Civil War 7.
You know, the great thing about that, you know, these storylines and what he's done so far in this first initial, you know, run of his is that he's laid stuff out early and then gone away from it. And then he comes back to it later on, and it really pays off. And he does the same thing in Daredevil too.
Yeah, this is one long story.
Much like
Bendis and Malieves.
Yeah,
Daredevil.
On Daredevil,
stuff
coming back into the fold later on that you may have dismissed or whatever. And I think that's what's going to happen here with Bucky at one point. You know, we're going to go away from that for a while, but at some point that's going to come back and really be a huge part.
And
of
Epstein's art is amazing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I just want an Invaders book.
Yeah. Simon, what you been reading?
Well, nothing this week because I've been traveling, but if I can pull something in from last week, I read the second-to-last issue in Marvel Team-Up. That was 24. It's by Robert Kirkman. And, again, I love Kirkman's writing. I think he's one of the funniest guys in comics around right now. And borrow a quote from Tom, the art was, again, serviceable. It's not the... this who, last story.
Do you know who that artist
I do
is?
Not remember who the artist is. The,
is it still...
it's not Ryan.
I don't think it's Ryan Ottley. It looks more like a Ryan Ottley clone, and he's not doing that great of a job of it. But, you know, I could be totally wrong. It could be Ryan Ottley, and he could come to my house and kick my ass, but that's fine.
That's the only thing that's ever kept me away from that book from the beginning of it has just been the art on it. I haven't liked the art on it. I think it was Scott Collins at one point, and I was right who I was talking about, or Collins. It's with a K, but...
Who's doing Beyond right now.
Yeah, and I don't care for his art.
That's the Flash guy, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
He did a great job on the Flash.
What's he doing now?
He's doing Beyond. The miniseries that Dwayne McDuffie is doing with...
Yeah.
A lot of Marvel characters.
Okay. Well, Simon, why do you like Marvel Team-Up? A lot of people love that book.
Yeah, it is a great book. And I think the only reason that it's ending is because Kirkman is finding that it's taking too much time to research all these different characters for the book, even though the sales are low on it. But they could have kept it going just because Kirkman and Marvel wants to keep Kirkman happy. They would have been okay with it. But it's just a great book because you get a sampling from very different parts of the Marvel Universe. I mean, one time you'll get Spider-Man and Moon Knight. And the next time you'll get Iron Man and Hulk. You can't get that in any other book. And besides that, Kirkman is just flat-out hilarious. And you'll never get more dialogue in a comic book than from him.
He's a talker.
Yeah. No, I'm going to have to go back and get those.
Damn it.
You might
want to
wait because that's going to be a trade.
Yeah.
There's one more issue, and then you look for that trade.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, guys, I think that's our top of the stack. We have a couple listener emails here. We're gonna march through this and our end announcements. Sal, you want to read that first listener email? It's good.
Sure. Hey, nice work on episode 43 with that delusional Kansan Yahoo, Andy Parks. Okay, full disclosure, Andy's a good guy, and he told me that he was on your show, so I listened and enjoyed it. Many thanks for mentioning the Will Flipson Show podcast. Andy's a natural-born comedian. I linked your site to the Will Flipson Show homepage. Thanks again, and keep up the good work. Best regards, Doug Snodgrass, a.k.a. Will Flipson.
There's definitely a reason he goes by Will Flipson.
Yeah, Snodgrass. Is that Icelandic or something? I don't know.
Can I read the next one?
Yeah. Check out Will Flipson, the podcast. Very funny stuff. So, yes, you can read the next one.
My name is Steven, and I am a big fan of your show. I listen to it every week. Actually, you guys have inspired me to start up my very own comic book podcast called Just Another Fanboy at www.justanotherfanboy.com. Now, I was curious if you guys could give me any tips to help you promote the help me promote the show. I'm only 3 episodes in, and I'm not crazy enough to believe that I should have a sizable audience just yet, but I wanted to get this thing rolling and off the ground. One thing I've noticed about you fellas is that you seem to be really into helping out your fellow podcasters, so any tips or help you could toss my way would be greatly appreciated. My one piece of advice is stay the fuck out of our way. What would you say?
I would say just...
be unique as you can.
Yeah, do something a little different and try and put a good show together, and I think people will...
Have fun.
And just, you know, it's like... You find your... sort of like your audience or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird talking about this considering we just started doing a podcast, you know,
eight months ago.
It's like we're experts in podcast. I don't know, but...
Well, with my 2.5 hours of experience, I would just say, you know, find your niche. I mean, you guys have your Around Comics. You take a look at Raging Bullets. They specifically do DC comic podcasting. I mean, you find what you love and you find that audience and you stick with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best thing.
Well, do the show that entertains you. That's what I do with Word Balloon. I mean, honestly, it's like, you know, why don't you do X, Y, and Z? It's like, because I don't want to do
that. That actually entertains you.
Yeah. And talking to those guys, believe me, it's not me. Notice how little I talk on Word Balloon as compared to comics. Let's be honest.
Stay the fuck out of our way.
Tom, you already said that.
Get
a guy
just reminding him.
Get a stand-up comic / improv guy on
stand-up
your show.
Stand-up comic is
accountant.
Not...
Accountant. Slash accountant.
Sorry.
Stand-up comic makes me sound tawdry. I would never stand up
tawdry.
And tell people jokes.
Wow, there's a line between the improvs and the stand-ups?
Yes, there is.
It's a very West Side
story.
Yeah.
And stay the fuck out of their way.
It's been a long time since I played Who's
out.
On First,
yeah,
so I had no
the
idea
out of
that,
my way
that was going on
comics.
These days. All right. I used to do both.
Steven, have
black
fun with it.
Black people dance like this and white people dance like that.
Didn't we have an email from Simon?
All right, I get it.
Well, I thought it'd be kind of weird to read Simon's email telling us that he was coming
funny.
Down when he was going to be
oh,
here. So.
Right.
Yeah, Simon emailed us too. Hi, Simon.
Hey, how's it going?
He's here.
Hey,
you like
he made
to
it.
Read, would you like to read your email?
All right, guys. That's, I think, another show.
Yeah.
We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. CPN is a collection of...
I'm not. I know. What? I always want. You're always here. I was like, the collection is the best.
You're not.
I'm a scab.
I'm a scab.
Sorry.
The CPN is collection of some of the best comic book podcasts
Canadian
on the net.
Scab.
Exactly. Sorry, man.
Give them the $10. Get on there. Come on. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com. The forum was great this week. Thanks to everyone who posted comments on the topic today. It was overwhelming. Just so everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays.
Yes.
Well, since this comes out on Monday, I guess we might as well tell people about
next week's show. We shouldn't, really. Wait till Tuesday.
You don't think post so?
I'm just kidding. Yeah, I know you're bursting at the seams.
I was, you know.
Go and tell them.
Well, on Friday for our recording, we're going to be welcoming one of the true literary giants.
Jesus Christ.
In this
Jesus
or
Christ
any.
Jesus Christ is going to be here?
He's written amazing books. I liked his first book. The second one, not so much.
The sequel was not so good.
Yeah, not that good.
No, we cower in fear. Tune in if you dare.
Cower in fear?
You're the one who was sweating bullets.
Greg Rucka's going to be on. Jesus Christ.
It's
we're already
Greg
on like a 4-hour podcast.
Yeah.
There's no reason
to get
to
it already.
Out.
Yes, the
my truest nightmare has arrived. Greg,
you guys
Rucka.
Are just gonna like drive around.
I'm not even gonna. Show
I was gonna
up.
Say I'm
not
just not like Chris really to sit down with him.
Yeah, forget it. It's not even. It's not gonna be.
No, it should be a lot of fun. Greg Rucka is gonna be here next week.
He's
so
a great guy.
Should be a great time. So and thanks.
I was gonna. I'm gonna.
John helped
I'm working on a special intro song for that episode.
Rucka.
Oh, I bet you are.
Special just for Chris and Greg.
Don't you know? Don't embarrass the poor kid. He's
had the time of my life.
Maybe Tom needs to sing said theme song. And,
no.
we'll find Jennifer Warrens to do the.
All right, I'm not going to do it, but it was going to be. It
was
gonna
she
be
the other
sang,
half of that?
Yeah, okay. It was going to be sung to the tune of "Oh Mickey, You're So Fine," and it was going to be "Oh Rucka, You're So Fine, You're So Fine, You Blow My Mind." Greg Rucka, Greg Rucka.
Don't play that for Greg.
No, I wasn't going to play it for him. I was going to play it for Greg.
Greg's a good guy. Greg's got a good audience, man. You want those
guys.
Oh,
we love Greg Rucka.
Well,
I'm just saying,
but no, his, like, the comic block guys, he's got great fans. Greg's got great fans.
Greg's a fantastic writer.
I'm not going to geek out on him. It'll be a good time. We're going to have a nice talk with him. So, September contest, the trivia challenge.
Queen and Country blew my mind, Greg Rucka.
Stop it. Listener LCS, do us a solid. Vote for us at Podcast Alley, iTunes Music Reviews.
Yeah.
Thank you, youbuynow.com. Go buy lots of toys. Saturday, October 14th, Around Comics and Dark Tower, we'll be hosting a Chicago area creator signing from 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. You can meet the likes of Francesco, Steve Bryant, Scott Johnson, Jason Malay, Michael Oliveri, Dave Wachter, Len Cody, and more. The list of creators is growing every day. Check out AroundComics.com for updates.
It's apparently grown since the beginning of the show. There's people on
got
the
a
second.
Phone call.
Yeah, we got a lot of emails during these 6 days that it took to record this show.
Dude,
Rucka's going
to
be out about 5 minutes,
today. Mr. Centris, always a pleasure having you in. Thank you so much.
Thank
sir.
You, lads. It's always a pleasure to sit here.
Uh-huh. Simon, thanks for driving all the way down from Canada.
And flying. And thanks for putting up with me.
You kind of like sit over there. It's like, these guys are freaking crazy. Tom?
Stupid,
always,
I think is the word
pleasure.
He was thinking. Not crazy.
Yeah, that's great.
And Sal, have fun editing down this 4-hour monster.
Oh, this show's never going to be released. Are you kidding me? Forget it.
Everyone, have a fantastic week. We'll be back again next Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in...
And around comics.
Greg Rucka.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week. With a panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.